Hey, the rookies are coming. All 8 Buffalo Bills draft picks and all of those undrafted rookie free agents are on their way, and they'll be on this field right here tomorrow.
Speaking of rookie free agents, who do you think is the greatest undrafted rookie free agent of all time in Bills history? That's an interesting question we're going to let you answer.
Plus, we've got veteran safety Micah Hyde in studio with us today at 12:30.
One Bills Live starts now.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker. Into the end zone, touchdown, touchdown.
And he's got it at the 10-yard line.
Touchdown, 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 Buffalo. The Bills win it in overtime.
Welcome to the show, Thursday afternoon show. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. New Era Field is where we're at. The sun has come out now after a very rainy morning. The sun has come out, and we got a decent weather day again in Orchard Park. We're setting records, I think, for consecutive sunny days after a brutal month of April. Good afternoon, everybody. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. Welcome, Steve.
Good to see you, man.
Heck of a storm last night. Did you hear that storm?
Oh, yeah.
This morning.
We had to close up. We had to close up windows and doors. And we had everything was opened up. It was all breezy out last night. It was beautiful. And then, you know, it sounded like gunfire going off at our house. It was unbelievable.
There was one crack of lightning right around 5 a.m., which I thought, that's it. This house is going down now.
Right?
You know, I mean, we live in the woods kind of like you do. And
yeah.
I don't know what it is. The thunder sounds louder around our house. What is that? Elevation?
Forget about louder. It sounds close.
It sounds closer.
Right? It sounds close. I mean, it sounds like, it's pretty. I kind of like thunder now that I'm an adult. I'm not afraid of it.
I am still afraid.
It's great. But, man, oh, man, it starts – you're laying there in bed with your eyes open at, like you say, 5 a.m.
Yeah.
And you're, like, going, what are my options here? What happened? What's going to happen? You know, I got to wait.
Yeah.
There's, like, there's going to be consequences of these lightning strikes.
You would think, right?
They're close.
I still shudder a little bit, a lot.
It was beautiful. I like it. I think it's kind of cool, but – like you said, when you're a homeowner.
Yeah, I start thinking about, well, first of all, it was garbage night last night. So I'm thinking, oh, man, there's going to be garbage all over the front lawn. Yeah. And then I start thinking about these trees. We got a lot of tall trees. One of which, our neighbor tree went down just a couple weeks ago in that windstorm. And I start thinking, all right, what's going down now? And where's it going to land?
That's the problem, too. You got all these tall trees. And if the tallest one goes down in a windstorm, the next tallest one's the lightning target. Now, you don't even know where that is. You know, nature has to tell you what's going to be next, right? So I've got – every time that we've had windstorms this last spring, too, I was looking out my back window, and I got trees that are bending in these huge windstorms we've had, and the roots are starting to bend out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, I just shudder. I just go, oh, man, because I know – that's going to turn into an expense or an enormous project that's going to soak up an entire free weekend. That I'm going to have to go out there and get that stump and chop up a tree that goes down to my lawn, plus the fact that I can't hang my hammock from it anymore.
This is how bad it was at our house last night.
Bad.
5 in the morning, I started thinking about, all right, what do you think's covered in insurance? What would be covered? If the tree lands on the house, breaks a few windows, that's insurable, right? Isn't it? Homeowners insurance? Got to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm laying there in bed at 5 in the morning thinking about this. It was a bad storm. Now it's kind of a nice day out, and we're happy to be here, right? We're pretty happy to be here.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, and you're new to the show. Can I say that? A couple of weeks. We do a show every day, and it's fun, but, you know, you got to put up a show every day. We had, one of our best ever shows yesterday when we had Trent Murphy in here. We had Thurman Thomas in here and Chris Mortensen on the line at 2 o'clock. We're going to hear more from Chris Mortensen's yesterday appearance because it was so good. We had a really good show yesterday.
Yeah, we did.
We've got to come back and do it again. That's the hard part every day.
The problem is we started the new show, One Bills Live, and it's like the NFL's dark.
Yeah.
I mean, we had the draft to look forward
to.
But
great.
Once the draft is over, you got these guys coming. And all these guys are coming around in their shorts and T-shirts, and they're riding on bikes and stuff and running through little drills. Nobody, you know, it's kind of like, even if you're a Bills fan or a football fan, it's not really the fun part of the game that you go out there and watch and stand around. It's going to be awesome. Now, we do want to go out and see Josh Allen throw when we can. But, you know, this part of the season in the NFL, for being a 12-month season, this is the 12th month.
I mean,
this is
there.
The month where it's,
wait till you see next month.
I'm didn't know this. I'm taking next month off.
It's a little more quiet. Mid June, once minicamp ends, the mandatory minicamp, and I think it's like June 18th.
Yeah.
The next four or five weeks are that's just when the, brutal.
All the coaching staffs take off. They give them their last little bit of freedom before they go to training camp. The building is virtually empty.
I'm out of here for a couple weeks.
Everybody is. All the staff, I mean, the offices kind of go into summer hours. Yeah. They're open like Monday through Thursday from 10 to – they're like, you know, 10 to 4 or whatever, and they go dark on Fridays. And I mean, it's just a ghost town over here.
Yeah, so not yet.
We're almost on the verge.
We're not there yet. We do have a show today. It sounds like we're laying the groundwork for saying, good night, everybody, flipping the switch. But we're not. We're going to be here till 3.
Here's the thing, and I didn't realize we dealt with this on the show. I'm kind of new here. So
you're the new guy.
There's all this stuff. There is some stuff going on, and we mentioned it in our open, where you know they're going to have some rookie free agents coming in, and they're going to sign a bunch of guys' contracts. The draft picks are going to get signed. We can't talk about it.
Well, there's a list of
– I didn't know they did that.
What? You know what they do? They wait until everybody's signed. So later today, Bills will announce the complete list. There's about a dozen undrafted free agents. And you know how important they can be to a roster. But we can't name the names, even though we kind of know the names. We can't name them until that's official because, you know, at the last minute, a guy could call up and say, hey, you know what? I got a better offer from the Minnesota Vikings when I'm going there.
Well, here's the thing. And it was more important seemingly, or at first glance, I guess it was more important in years past, like during the drought. Because there was always every year there's one, two, maybe three undrafted rookie free agents made the team. Not so much anymore.
Well,
I think they've
– last year, none.
Nobody made it last year. And on a team, on a roster that seemingly was going to take a step backwards, as we found out when all these – they traded all those, made all the moves we've talked about, you know, with the departure of all those great players, you think, well, that would be a time when they really would have a bunch of rookie free agents. And it really didn't happen. They went with veteran guys, signed a lot of guys to one-year deals, and I think it'll probably be a lot the same this year. I think this is going to be a much more difficult team to make for these young rookie free agents. I mean, I came into my rookie year as a draft pick. I was 226 overall, and back then, it was the old time. You know, you get a 3-day mini camp. You know, so they bring everybody in, and it's virtually mandatory. So we all show up. And it's the rookie draft picks. There was no rookie free agents really at that point. And I remember showing up, you know, your eyes are wide and I walk into a room and there's Greg Bingham in there and Robert Brazil and Warren Moon.
So you're there with Betts?
Yeah. Everybody was there together. And it was literally 3 days after the draft.
Okay.
I mean, it was immediately. And at least that's my memory. And you know, I was still just wide-eyed and like, golly gee whiz, you know, look at these guys. And and they started installing the plays. And when I came in, I didn't know anything about playing wide receiver. I didn't know how to read defenses. I didn't know how to make adjustments at the line. I didn't know how to think that fast. I hadn't seen enough. And, of course, as a ninth rounder with 13 guys at my position group, you know, it wasn't like you were getting reps. You know, you just did it all in the coaches and stuff, and it was really a huge adjustment for me. I was really lucky to make that team my rookie season.
You made it though as a ninth rounder. Now, of course, the draft is 7 rounds, and most teams will get undrafted rookies in camp. The Bills will have them here. So here's what's going on: the veterans are out there today, just wrapping up the off-season conditioning program, and then Thursday they're done. They come back next week. Tonight really, they'll start arriving. The 8 draft picks and the undrafted rookies. Also, some players have been invited on a tryout basis, and sometimes those guys stick too in the new NFL. But we want to kind of focus. We can't give you the names yet because it hasn't been released, probably later this afternoon. But you know there are going to be some notable college performers in this group of undrafted rookie free agents. And we want to ask you who, you know, you think about Bills history, and I know a lot of our audience is longtime Bills fans. Who's the greatest undrafted rookie free agent in Buffalo Bills history? That's our Twitter poll today. That's where we'd like to start the conversation, and we'll do that in just a minute. 803-0550, the number to call if you have comments or questions. Outside Buffalo, it's a toll-free call, 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it on Twitter at OneBillsLive.
Yeah, we assimilated a big list, and we've got like 7 names on it. It goes everybody from Cookie Gilchrist and Booker Edgerson all the way through Tony Green, Kent Hull, Pat Williams, Jason Peters, and Fred Jackson.
But you might have some. I threw that list together this morning. I might be missing somebody.
Yeah.
Here are the ground rules. It's got to be a rookie free agent, and even though I included Kent Hull. Kent played in the USFL. Was he actually a rookie? Well, he was an NFL rookie. If a guy had played somewhere else in the NFL before he came to Buffalo, even if he had been undrafted, look, this is an informal thing. But it's our Twitter poll, and you can vote on it, and it's been up for a little while. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the telephone line, too. The Bills, they will announce their undrafted rookie free agents later today. We want to know who's the best undrafted rookie free agent in franchise history. And on Twitter, we put up three names and other, and we don't, as I said, you might have somebody better than the three we listed, but right now on Twitter, 43% of you say it's Fred Jackson, best undrafted rookie free agent in franchise history. Close behind, 41% say it's the great center Kent Hull. 14% say Cookie Gilchrist, who just went up on the Wall of Fame last year. 2% have somebody else in mind, and as Steve said, there are others.
There's a lot of others.
Yeah, Booker Edgerson, undrafted.
And you know what?
Tony Green, a great player for the Bills. 1971. You know, he would. Pat Williams, an outstanding player for the Bills. Jason Peters still playing. 2004 undrafted
Jason
rookie.
Jason Peters has been mentioned as a Hall of Famer, as a left tackle. Now, most of that would have been, not some of it would have been here in Buffalo, but a lot of it would have been in Philadelphia, where he's made a real career for himself. And like we said, we're just having fun with this, and it's a casual day. Here at One Bills Drive, but the rules are written in stone. You can't have somebody who was a rookie with somebody else. It's got to be a rookie free agent signed by the Buffalo Bills. Like, I think we're talking like the Bills would be this first NFL team the guy got signed by. That's what we're talking about, and that's what all these guys kind of do. And for me, I really liked Fred Jackson. I thought he was a great guy. He's a wonderful person, great addition to that football team. But he's not in my top five in this list.
Really?
Yeah, he was. He was a really good player. But you look at Kent Hull, Jason Peters, and Pat Williams; those guys are phenomenal. Booker Edgerson, the Wall of Famer. You know, those are guys who really meant something to the franchise, and the fan base, I think, really did put their arms around Freddie Jackson, maybe like no other rookie free agent in team history. Fred Jackson was a part of Buffalo when he was playing here, and he came back and just a few weeks ago signed a retirement contract to retire as a Buffalo Bill. But to me, if you're going about by the guys who are the really good players, it's like Kent Hull, Jason Peters, Pat Williams, and Cookie Gilchrist. Those four guys are maybe some of the best people that had ever, you know.
Right,
they're in the top part of the all-time 50th team if you look at their total – total careers.
There's four. You said Fred doesn't make your top five. Who's your fifth? I would. Can I throw a guy in?
Yeah.
It might be Tony Green was a great Buffalo Bill, a great player, a safety who came as an undrafted rookie free agent out of University of Maryland, played 9 seasons with the Bills.
That says
a great
a lot.
Safety.
That says a lot.
Yeah, Tony Green, I think, would be in my top five.
Longevity is critical for guys who really want to earn respect around the league. If you can stay in the league a long time, guys really tip their hat to you because they know how grueling it is and how difficult it is to stay sharp. Tony Green being a rookie free agent. And you think about across the league, and I mentioned this to Murph when we were getting ready for the show. Occasionally, not very often, in fact, I don't think it's happened, there may be one or two guys who started their careers as rookie, undrafted free agents and went all the way to the Hall of Fame. One, the only one I can think of, was John Randall from the Minnesota Vikings. He was an undrafted rookie free agent, came in when Dennis Green was the coach of the Minnesota Vikings and had a Hall of Fame career. And I'm having trouble thinking if there was even another one ever.
In the Hall of Fame?
Because, you figure guys like Bruce Smith and Anthony Munoz, first guys picked in the draft. Of course, you figure they're going to do it. You didn't know Bruce was going to get 200 sacks in his career. But Anthony Munoz, I mean, there's a guy that, he's 9 feet tall and 10 feet wide, and he's, he's a left tackle that you can't even run around without getting a drink of water in the middle of it. So, you figure those guys are going to be good. But the rookie free agents are one of the all-time great stories. You love seeing them. You love seeing them come in. People start to gravitate towards them in the preseason, right, Murph? I mean, you see these guys practice, and everybody kind of says, oh, there's the guy, and he makes one play. It's like, oh, he's got a chance. He's going to be a great player, and they found him on the street. It's kind of a great story because it's kind of every man's story. I just think it's fun.
Yeah, and a lot of those stories will start to be told. I'm looking up there. There might be more undrafted players as Hall of Famers than you realize.
Yeah, because I've never
mentioned John Randall. Warren Moon, undrafted. Now
come on, man. Yeah, you know what? Think about it.
He's like Cookie.
Listen,
started
I was a whole
in Canada.
I played with Warren. for parts of two seasons in Houston. His second year in the NFL was my first year in the NFL. And he had come down from Canada. He had won, what, like six Grey Cups in Canada. He had played in Canada as a quarterback. And because at that time, the NFL didn't want a black guy playing quarterback. And it was painfully obvious. And finally, he became a free agent. He was going to come down. And he was the hottest free agent on the market that year and made $1 million as a quarterback. He broke the bank. Was doing it like nobody else was. And, you know, he turned in a Hall of Fame career for the Oilers, for the Vikings, for the Chiefs. Played for a long, long time, even after he had played for a long time, a good career in Canada. And so, yeah, right. That really brings into sharp focus how far they've come when Warren Moon couldn't even get a look at that position because he was a black guy coming in, going to the Hall of Fame. Warren Moon is one of the great all-time stories in NFL history because not only did he prove it, he also taught the NFL a big lesson. It was great.
Larry Little, who played guard for the Dolphins and the Chargers, Hall of Famer.
Oh, there undrafted. You go, undrafted.
Yeah. Emmett Thomas, cornerback for Kansas City. Hall of Famer, okay, undrafted. I've got the list in front of me from the Hall of Fame.
Let's hear it. Let's see. I want to hear it.
You want to hear all of them?
Yeah,
I'll give you some because
list.
There's about 14. Mick Tinglehoff from the Minnesota Vikings, center, undrafted.
He just went in.
Yeah. Willie Wood, safety for Green Bay, Hall of Famer. Now you're getting way back there, 1960s. Right. Dick Night Train Lane from the Rams, 1952. Jack Butler, 1951, Pittsburgh Steeler. A guy who just passed away a couple of years ago. Many, many friends in Buffalo and the scouting. He was a great scout. He was the guy who put Blesto together, but he's in the Hall of Fame. Cornerback for the Steelers, one of the all-time Steelers. Who else would you know? Marion Motley.
We're
back in the 40s and 50s. But, yeah there are some are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
I can say the league was kind of a mom-and-pop league back in the 40s and 50s, and you could see – and scouting wasn't what it is. You could find a guy somewhere who was truly should have been drafted and would have been drafted had they known about him. But that was back in the days when the scouts would go out, beat the bushes, go out at all these, you know, semi-pro leagues and colleges, and they'd say, you know, what do you think? And the guy'd say, I don't know if I want to play professional football for $500, you know. And it's really true. And
sure,
so,
I'd rather paint houses.
Right, because I can work for my dad as a plumber and make more than that. So I don't really want – so there was always that – thing where you could find a guy out there, particularly back in the area you're talking about, 40s and 50s and the 60s too, where, you know, scouting wasn't up to where it was, where it is now, and you could find guys who had somebody known about them, they would have been drafted very high. But nevertheless, undrafted rookie free agents in the Hall of Fame, kind of a cool list.
So the Bills got their undrafted rookies coming into town tonight. They'll be on the field tomorrow with the draft picks, the eight draft picks. Want to know from you who's the greatest undrafted rookie free agent in Buffalo Bills franchise history. Give us a call, 803-0550, the number. We got lines wide open. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it on Twitter at OneBillsLive. You can vote in our Twitter poll or just kind of comment on Twitter. We got on the show today, coming up at the bottom of this hour, veteran Micah Hyde, Bills safety, just off the field after, what, week three of the offseason conditioning program. Micah Hyde will join us in studio. 1 o'clock today, Cynthia Freeland from NFL Network. She is there at 2 p.m. She just put us off until 2. That's okay. Did you hear our producer?
Don't get bitter. He doesn't talk to me. He only talks to you.
Oh.
He doesn't
Cynthia
talk to
Cynthia Freeland was one. Now she's 2 p.m. today, and she'll be joining us. And we're going to hear some more from Chris Mortensen, who we had on the show yesterday.
I got some feedback on the Chris Mortensen interview that we did, and I said after he got off the air – of all the people we had on, and, you know, we're all getting these quarterbacks. We had talked about these quarterbacks until we all were sick to our stomach.
Yes, a couple of weeks ago.
Right. And Chris Mortensen came on, and he couldn't say enough about Josh Allen. He was like, and furthermore, he was at the Peyton Manning the Manning Passing Academy. He goes there every year, just about every year. And he said all the things that were happening at that camp around Josh Allen and pertaining to him. And plus people he's talked to out around the league and in college football. And if you want to feel a little bit better about Josh Allen, for those of you who are those pick haters, go listen to the Chris Mortensen interview. We're going to play a little bit of it later on because it was I was stunned.
Yeah. You know, he reached out to our producer after his appearance on the show yesterday, Chris Mortensen. He told Jay Harris about some of the other comments he'd heard from scouts and coaches from out west, teams who had played against Josh Allen in Wyoming, and still coming up with platitudes and you know, feel good stories about Josh Allen. The thing that gets me, and I said to our producer, because, you know, Steve, we're always trying to learn from our mistakes here. I said, look, next year before the draft, no matter what, let's, and we did a pretty good job of it, let's try to stay away from just the run-of-the-mill draft, you know, guys who put together a mock draft on a website and just yak about the draft and maybe don't have a real connection to the game, and stick with guys who talk, either are the real football guys, coaches in particular, or talk to them, scouts, you know, because we all fell into it, I think us less than some, but we all fell into the trap going into that draft a couple of weeks ago of kind of repeating, you know, the lines, you know, the headlines, you know, for each quarterback. You know what
repeating.
I'm saying?
Repeating. Oh,
I mean, what else? Josh Rosen not a good guy. Josh Allen, 56% completion percentage. Baker Mayfield is Johnny Manziel. You know what I mean? It was like all you needed to do was have one line about each of those quarterbacks, and you thought, some people thought you were educated and prepared to talk about them. And no, we weren't. Yeah. And look, we don't know how Josh Allen's going to work out. We got to see him play. Get to see him throw a little bit this weekend here at One Bills Drive. But there's more to it than just one line. You know what I mean? One headline.
Yeah, and we had everybody we could think of on to talk because we were trying to find, because we didn't know who it was going to be. And there were six of those guys out there, those quarterbacks. And Chris Mortensen told us yesterday the Manning Passing Academy, when this group came through there last year, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, Archie Manning, and all the guys who came in and worked with guys at that camp said it was the greatest quarterback group they have ever worked with in the 17 years or 22 years that they've been doing it. They've been doing it a ton, and this was, without question, the greatest group of quarterbacks they had ever worked with. So you think about that, the top end of it is pretty high praise. And so to talk to your point about, you know, getting who we're going to talk to next
about
year
in the draft, going into the
draft. Here's the thing, though. We're talking about it every day.
Right.
It's hard not to circle back and start repeating things.
I just don't want to repeat things that are not based in reality. I want to get a little deeper than he's not a good guy. You know, he wore a hat criticizing the president. You know, that was the kind of stuff that people were basing their opinions on with these five quarterbacks, quarterbacks, four or five.
Oh, man.
You know what I mean? People would
And deeper, and pretty soon you get ridiculous.
You start repeating what you'd heard somebody else say. We'll try to dig a little bit more down to the real stuff, the stuff maybe the scouts think about. Do you think at any point, look, Bills, coaches, scouts, that 56% completion percentage, that tag put on Josh Allen, they knew that. They probably noticed that right off the bat. They went deeper. They went deeper into Josh Allen. They found out, well, why is his completion percentage 56%? And what kind of offense were they running? What kind of passes were they asking him to attempt? Who did he have playing with him? What happened to their offense? Who were they playing against? I guess all I'm saying is we'll do a better job. I think we should commit to trying to do a better job next year of getting a little bit more into it than just – repeating the mantra that everybody's saying about each other. And look, it was an unusual year, right? With five first round quarterbacks. That doesn't happen very often. And each of them with strengths and pretty prominent weaknesses. That was an unusual year, which is why I think one of the reasons why that happened.
That's exactly what I was going to say. That year, this last year, this draft that we were just a part of, with six guys who were, you know, looking at going in the first round. Actually, Mason Rudolph dropped down to the third round. He was the only one of those the six who did. You got to think it was a weird year. First of all, it was the first year in a long time where Buffalo was sitting in the middle of it, and we didn't know which one of those five or six guys were. And we knew that Buffalo was going to move in that draft, and we didn't know how or where or who they were going to move with or how the draft was going to fall. And then, so really, it was not going to be like Buffalo had the first pick, and all we had to do was pick one of those guys. It was way beyond that, and we went deep into all of it. And some of what distracted us from what kind of guys these players were was where the Bills were going to pick and which of those guys were going to get drafted. So we spent just as much time this last – it was an unbelievable experience for us to be a part of this draft. It was from 2-3 months ago all the way through the lead-up, it was like no other draft the Buffalo Bills have ever been a part of. And that's why I think we looked at each other like there's nothing else to talk about, and we talked about it all day, every day. And I never got tired of it because there was always something about each of these players that was a plus or a minus, and a probability or improbability that the Bills could even possibly pick him, or probability or improbability that the Bills would move up to a point that would change all of those probabilities or improbabilities. It was just never ending. It was such a circle we found. It was a vortex of draft stuff that we couldn't, because our team, the Bills, were in the thick of it. And it was, and now that it's all come, you know, shaken out, I think more and more people are starting to go, now, okay, now we're going to go deep into this guy, this Josh Allen, and we're finding out why, for a lot of people, this guy opens eyes. This guy is really intriguing. They're really high on him. You can't say enough, and although we've tried to do enough of it in the last week or two, about how well the Bills handled the run-up to this draft and the trades and the trade-up and the moves and got them everybody they got for the right price.
Hey, Bills rookies, including Josh Allen, will be on the field here tomorrow and Saturday, and I think on Sunday as well. And the rookie undrafteds come in as well, undrafted rookie free agents. Kind of taking a historical look at it today, we want your help. Who's the best undrafted rookie free agent in Bills history? That's our Twitter poll. We've talked about some of them. You may have some ideas. 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. And on Twitter at OneBillsLive. Steve, why don't you read some of them off the tweet sheet?
From Brad, he says, definitely it's Jason Peters, even though Peters didn't work out here, I guess. I believe we turned the Philly pick into Eric Wood. So if you're going to go down that road and say which of these guys, you know, Jason Peters may get in the Hall of Fame as a left tackle. That's starting to be talked about now at the end of his career. He came in here as an undrafted rookie free agent tight end out of Arkansas and immediately turned him into a left tackle who was a phenomenal, phenomenal athlete. And he continues to be that for the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, I don't know that you can put him on that list. Certainly, he turned into that as a member of the Philadelphia Eagles, but he didn't turn into that as a member of the Buffalo Bills. He left, and actually, you got to think, and this will bring something with Bills fans, he wanted out of Buffalo.
Oh, yeah.
Does that sour him in your mind? I think for a lot of people, it would. I think
9-time Pro Bowler with the Eagles, obviously, Jason Peters. 9 times. That's what gets him some consideration, I would think, as a potential Hall of Famer. But, yeah, he had a salary issue, wanted out. I recall at the time one of the coaches on the coaching staff told me how he was absolutely impossible to deal with in terms of meetings, not showing up on time, not paying attention to meetings. He did everything in his power to get traded away, and it worked. They traded him away. They just couldn't deal with him. He was the third highest-paid offensive lineman on the team, I recall back then. And that's what kind of got him going and got him going down the wrong path with the Buffalo Bills. But, Jason Peters, undrafted rookie, tight end, as you said, Steve, I recall his first rookie minicamp. And the Bills held it. I think it was might have been a full team minicamp in the stadium, a couple thousand people there. Jason Peters caught a deep pass down the middle. It just outran everybody, and the place just exploded. I mean, it was like, whoa, look at this guy. Yeah. As a tight end. Now, he turned into a really good left tackle as well.
A great left tackle, but really an all-time
left
tackle.
He was a dynamic athlete who put it on display, his first appearance on the field right here in Orchard Park.
Yeah, and there's other people are chiming in about other guys. As much as we love Freddie, he was a great Bill. But come on, it's Kent Hull all the way. 67 is a Wall of Famer, had longevity with the Bills, was a leader and a linchpin of the O-line of the Bills' best teams in their history. He should be in the Hall of Fame, and, of course, he's very sad. He's no longer with us, and I'll echo that sentiment. I miss that guy. And you're right. He is probably the greatest center in Bills history and one of the true, true pillars and core players of a team that went to 4 straight Super Bowls. That guy, I miss that guy.
All right, we'll talk more about this. The best undrafted rookie free agent in franchise history. Who do you think it is? We'll take your phone calls, 803-0550. And from outside Buffalo, toll-free, 1-888-550. 2550, and we'll do it on Twitter as well. We'll get back to that. But when we come back, we're going to talk to a veteran, safety Micah Hyde, Pro Bowler last year. He'll be joining us live in studio when we return. It is One Bills Live, presented by Kalida Health. We're coming here from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Back to the show, One Bills Live. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, joined in studio by a guy just off the practice field for today's session of the off-season conditioning program. Safety Micah Hyde going into his 6th year in the league, 2nd year of the Bills. And your week is pretty much over now, right?
Yes,
you're off
yes,
the field. Congratulations.
Yes,
another
Thank
week
you.
Of off-season conditioning over.
Thank you. Yeah, we're going to head to New York City tomorrow with the fiance. We're watch a few plays, see a few plays.
What are you going to see?
We're going to see Dear Evan Hansen and Hamilton.
Yeah. Okay. You got to see Hamilton if you get tickets.
Yeah, we've been there a few times and we haven't seen Hamilton yet. Yeah.
They're pricey, right?
Yeah, stay on.
Yeah, it's not like, it's not like a $5 movie ticket.
Yeah, that's why we've been waiting. We waited till this offseason to finally get back there and see Hamilton. So we got them.
Are you going on a Friday night?
We're going, I can't remember if it's Friday night or Saturday night. One of the two are.
Weekend.
Yes, weekend. It's
big
packed.
Money.
Yes, it is.
Hey, Mike, we talked to a couple of your teammates on defense, Lorenzo most notably, Alexander, and talks about how it's just such a comfortable feeling being in the second year in this defense, and you have the same experience.
Oh, my gosh. Me and Poirier talk all the time about that, and it's like, you know, you come in this offseason, you're able to know the calls, and obviously we're always building. We're always trying to learn more and learn a lot more about this defense, but at the same time, we know the terminology. That was the most difficult part last year, and we're able to try to build off what we knew or what we learned from last year.
You have a new defensive backfield coach, though, and things haven't changed much, right?
No, he's doing an awesome job, man. He's getting us motivated. You know, he knows his football, that's for sure. And, you know, we got somebody like Bobby Babich in the room still that he knows his football also. So they're working together, and then they're translating it to us. And from there, we're just, you know, trying to get better.
You talk about defense, and you finally know the calls and that, but – a lot of people don't understand that when you're in a defense or an offense, year to year, it starts to evolve.
Yes.
Because as you play your defense, teams will start to attack it certain ways. And then you say, oh, I see what they're trying to do. I get it. So you start to put wrinkles in your defense. So it starts to evolve. And even the same call 2 years from now will be the same call, but it'll look completely different.
Exactly. And that's the thing about the NFL is, you know, these coaches have all offseason to study film, and they watch film from the whole season. They watch film on opponents. They watch film on individual guys. So I think the number one thing in the NFL is with every single call that you have, there's a weak part of the defense. Right. And I think as long as you understand the weak part, you'll be fine. And that's where, you know, the evolving comes in. You have to understand stuff like that.
And it's interesting, too, when you get in there, you understand the weakness of your own defense, which is – a lot of people are, you know, you're supposed to be out there bulletproof, right?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, because
there's a weakness.
There's places that are going to be hard to get to cover, that kind of thing. So you got to think, too, and here's the thing that gets me about playing, because I never played defense, but you understand where that team's supposed to attack you. So you almost kind of expect it.
Exactly. That's the number one thing.
Depending on the quality of the guy pulling the trigger, right?
Yes.
I mean, sometimes they just ain't good enough.
Yeah.
And that's when you get a break, but it's also like, well, wait, what are you doing?
And it goes both ways.
What am I missing? Right?
Yeah, yeah. When you're playing, you know, a very good team with a very good quarterback, you know where they're going to attack you. You know, if you're in a single high defense,
you're going deep down the sideline.
You know, it's as simple as that. And I think that I think as long as people understand that and your defense understands that, then you're able to make plays that way. But it also goes vice versa. If you're playing a team with not good, you know, not as good as of a quarterback and or offense, you kind of bait them into doing that, and that's where you get the interceptions.
Yeah, and it works the same way on a defense. When you're looking at an offense, a little bit more like about matchups, and they get into a certain formation, you kind of get a tip as to, you know, what
exactly
offensive linemen are going to step, where they're going to step to.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the ball is snapped, you know you got a stunt that's going to go right in there where they hurt.
Yep.
And you know as defensive backs, when you get in that thing, that ball's coming out, and I don't have to retreat. I'm going to stay right here, and that guy's going to run to me, and I'm going to pick it off and go.
Every single play is a chess match.
Right.
It is you know, like I said, these coaches are studying so much, and they translate it to us, and we, you know, go out there on Sundays, and it's honestly a chess match. Like we figure out where we can beat them, they figure out where they can beat us, and from there you just have to stop it.
How did it? Like, one of the things that was remarkable about your team last year. When you took the field and got off, you know, you got off to like a 5-2 start, and mostly it was because of you guys in the secondary. I'm just saying, generalizing. There's a lot of things that went into it, and everybody contributed, but 5-2, you guys were churning out turnovers at an incredible rate, and really, that really was the engine that fired you off to the good start.
Yeah.
What, you know, generally speaking, why was that happening? Well,
I think somebody like Sean McDermott, he preaches it. He preaches getting after the football, whether if it's an interception, punching the ball out, which we saw a couple times last year. You know, we practice that so much that it becomes habit. So, you know, having Sean, a motivator, as a head coach, and he's, you know, former safety coach. So he understands, you know, the defensive backs and, the whole defensive mindset of creating turnovers. But then at the same time, it's the defense, man. I love this defense. It creates ways that you're looking at the quarterback and you're able to react. I've always said to myself, I'm a reaction type of guy. I don't see myself as a lockdown, one-on-one type guy. I like to see the quarterback and react off that, off what the receivers are doing or the tight ends, read his eyes, read his body language. Exactly. And that's where I feel like I can elevate my game. And there's a lot of people on the defense that are like that also. So this defense allows us to do that.
Micah Hyde, Bills safety in studio with us. Also about last year, you got 5 picks. Your partner back there, Jordan Poyer, got 5 picks. Mm-hmm. How did the two of you immediately have that sort of chemistry together and play so well together off the bat?
I think that we both understood the circumstances once we got here. And, you know, talking with Sean McDermott, he said, look, you guys have been overlooked. I know what you guys can do. And we literally – the first day we got here, we just looked at each other and like, man, let's do it. This is our turn. You know, we've been places in the past where I don't feel like, you know, we've been as appreciated as what we are here. And once we got here, we were able to do our thing. And like I said, we made a promise to each other. We're going to go out there every day and give it our all, get this defense lined up, get our corners going. And from there, things just started happening. You know, we understand that last year's last year. That's in the past. We have to continue to work hard and do all that do all that stuff, but you know that's what OTAs and all that stuff is for, is to build back up to that level.
You're a veteran. You came over as a free agent. You were one of the first guys they spoke to when they started building their roster and building their team. And then you were there when you and Poyer, and all of a sudden you got two guys that were brand new as well. I mean, yeah. You got four brand new faces on the starting secondary. What did you see in like Tre'Davious White?
Oh man,
when he came in as a draft pick. And you saw him come in, and you were going to start in the secondary with him. Talk to him about his season, about what he was when he first came in, and how he evolved so quickly.
Somebody like Tre'Davious, man, that dude is—he's a beast. He when he first got here, he was so raw. Like he didn't know the playbook. All of us didn't really know the playbook when we first got here, but I could just see it. I could see how good he was going to be, and the sky's the limit for somebody like him. I stay in his ear every single day. I'm like, look, man. Defensive player of the year. That's something like that you should be going for every single season here on out. I understand you were a rookie last year, you're trying to feel your way into the NFL, but now you got that experience. Like it's time to go. So we just try to come together as one. And I think the coaches did a great job of getting us in that position because, you know, Sean McDermott, like I said, he's talking to us every single day. Bobby Babich, we had Gilbert last year, but JB this year, he's going to be the same way. He's going to make sure that we're all communicating, all getting lined up in positions, and they're going to put us in positions to make plays.
Micah Hyde, let me ask you this. You got named to the Pro Bowl, didn't get a chance to go last year because of injury. Were you disappointed or were you, okay, I was.
You know, funny story, man. We got all the flights and all that stuff, and as the season unwind and, you know, the playoffs were over with, we found out that, you know, we weren't going to be able to go down there. So I had to, you know, call the airlines and, you know, pretty much say, I'm sorry. Like, hey, we need to, you know, somehow, you know, get our money back.
Right.
And, I was a little disappointed just because it was, you know, it's one of my goals. It's as, you know, individual goal. But at the same time, I still have something to build for. I think that coming into this year, and it's not just myself, it's this whole secondary. Like, we understand that, you know, especially being in Buffalo, you don't get as much recognition.
Right.
And so we are going out there this year, and we want to, not just myself, but we all want to get to the Pro Bowl. We want to make sure that people know that, you know, the Buffalo Bills secondary is for real, and not just our secondary, but our defense. And so we have that mindset this year, and I think it's going to carry over, and we're going to have a pretty good season.
Well, even though you didn't play in the game, you're still a Pro Bowl player because, you know, you were the guy that they chose, and you just couldn't go for whatever reason. So
correct.
You still are.
Appreciate it.
Yeah,
9 Pro Bowls.
And I'll tell you what, you will get attention. Listen, you will get attention. You guys keep winning, keep going to the playoffs, you will get attention. I mean, you know that because – and I like the vibe coming out of the locker room because if the team's doing great, there's enough attention for all the guys going around. And you guys had to really revel in how cool it was for you guys to get into the playoffs the way it happened. And it was a really special moment for Bills fans everywhere.
I'm getting the chills right now thinking about that.
I still do. I mean, every time I see that locker room video,
crazy.
It kind of makes me tear up.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, I cry at beer commercials too. Right. So, but it was what a moment it was for the team and for the players and for Sean McDermott and everybody.
I mean, I said this since day one. The first time I met Sean, I could tell that this place was headed in the right direction. He didn't say anything about football. He asked me how my family was, how my fiance, when I'm getting married, like all this type of stuff. So this guy can just motivate. He can get guys going. And when he's on that football field or he's on that sideline and he's talking to you, everybody's paying attention. So I think that what we were able to do last year was what he has in store for this community. And I'm not saying we're going to win the next 10 Super Bowls.
Right.
But this guy is getting everybody in position, getting this football team, setting the foundation for what's to come in the future.
Mikey, you told us about your plans for this weekend with a trip to New York. It sounds like your calendar is pretty full with a lot of weddings, including your own coming up here.
Yes,
right?
For sure. July 7th.
Congratulations.
Yes, it is going down in San Diego. No, it's exciting. I had a few jobs. Amanda was going back and forth from here to San Diego. She's from San Diego. So
okay.
She was going back and forth and last football season to get all the details and stuff sorted out. So I have a few jobs of what I want to wear that day, make sure my groomsmen look good. But she's been awesome with this whole wedding planning.
Yeah. Take it from two old guys who've been married for a while.
Yeah.
If mama ain't happy, ain't nobody.
I understand.
So just remember that.
I understand that.
And you also had the chance too, your backfield mate, Jordan Poirier, you were at his wedding a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it was awesome. This is down in Jamaica. We had a blast. I was so happy for him and you know, his fiance or his wife now, Rachel. It was just a nice, smaller wedding in Jamaica on the resort. And it was amazing, man. I was so happy for them and, years to come of a great marriage.
Mike, thanks.
Jamaican wedding, Murph.
Jamaican wedding?
I'm liking the West Hound of it.
Sounds like a bad movie.
We'll skip the wedding. Let's just go down, right?
Just stay on the resort.
Mike, thanks for this.
Thanks for coming in, man.
We'll see you around. We appreciate you coming in today.
Thank you. Anytime, guys.
Micah Hyde, Bill Safety, joining us in studio. Steve and I back with more. We'll continue our discussion. Who's the best undrafted rookie free agent the Bills have ever had? Give us a call or we'll talk about it on Twitter. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Back on One Bills Live, Steve Tasker along with John Murphy. Just had a nice interview with Micah Hyde. We've had these guys in here, Murphy. They're in there for their off-season workouts. And we're getting a chance to talk to him. Trent Murphy, Micah Hyde, of course, Lorenzo Alexander, a good friend. And John Michael Holohan tweets in, and something we were kind of just thinking. He says, every player you guys interview is bright, well-spoken, and super positive. These are guys I'm proud to root for. Love the culture that's being built in Buffalo. You know, we got to admit, you're right. I mean, we started noticing it as well. You get these guys like Harrison Phillips that they just drafted. You get guys like Josh Allen, his reputation and what he sounds like in all his interviews. Tremaine Edmonds.
Marshall Newhouse
the other day. I mean, it's really amazing to talk with these guys, how articulate, how positive they are, how excited they are to be here in Buffalo and on this team, and how they just seem like they're going to fit just perfect. It's the perfect place for them. And, it's starting to warp my sense of reality about, about how hard it is to put together a good team. And these guys, I mean, I don't know where they find them, but they do. And I don't know how they do their vetting process. And I don't know if they need, what do we know about these draft picks and the young guys? We know Micah Hyde's a really good player. We know Kyle Williams is a really good player. We know Jordan Poirier's a really good player and all these guys. But some of these rookie free agents, we don't know. But they certainly sound like they fit the mold of the good players the Bills have already got on their roster.
I agree. Yeah, we'll see. We're talking a lot about these rookie free agents who are coming in. Mike on his way out said, I asked him on his way out, who's the greatest undrafted free agent you ever played with? And he said, Sam Shields.
Sam Shields.
Defensive back at Green Bay.
Yeah.
But he also said some of the rookies are in already, the free agents, the draft picks. So that's kind of what we're talking about today. You know, we're going to have a lot of time to talk about, and we have talked to the draft picks, but who's the greatest undrafted rookie free agent in Bills history, greatest undrafted rookie in Bills history. Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550, or on Twitter. I got one, Steve, that got by me. I told you I didn't get them all. And Larry in Cheektowaga is going to name the name because he's on the line with us. Larry, you came up with somebody who got by me. Tell us about your nomination for the greatest undrafted free agent in Bills history.
Hi, Steve. I thought maybe you said it because I know he's on the Wall of Fame.
Yeah.
Robert James, great defensive back.
That got by me, yeah.
Robert who?
Robert James.
Robert James.
Oh, yeah. Up, you know, he's a Wall of Famer, yeah. That's
cornerback.
Right.
Great player.
Yeah. I don't know if this is the guy that I know there was a player that Ralph Wilson's daughter scouted. I'm not sure if this is the player that she scouted. Am I right?
There was a couple of them, but I think the one that you're thinking of and the one of the really good players that they scouted was Jerry Butler. Was the one that she found, and she went down there to look at another player, and it ended up being, she said, listen, he was pretty good, but this other guy we need to look at, and it was Jerry Butler.
Robert James, and I just looked him up, and you made a really good point, Larry. Three Pro Bowls for the Bills, four interceptions in 1971. 1969 undrafted rookie free agent, Robert James, on the Wall of Fame. I'll never forget, Stephen, I was a Bills fan, right? 1975, so I'm coming to a preseason game, a night preseason game with buddies of mine. And we're a little late. I know who to blame, but I won't call them out publicly. We're late for the game. We get in, and the whole stadium is silent, and everybody's watching the trainers run out to tend to Robert James. I mean, he absolutely tore up his knee in a preseason game, 1975. Missed that year, tried to come back the next year, never the same. Really one of the – and, again, you were talking about it the other day, about the devastating nature of knee injuries back then, mid-70s. You couldn't fix guys, and Robert James' knee was so torn up they could never fix him.
That's right.
But, man, he was a great player. He was a, as I said, three-time Pro Bowl performer, and I had forgotten that he was undrafted. That's a great, great call from Larry.
Yeah, I was trying to make a joke. Last week we said, you know, back then they kind of fixed your knees with, you know, with a chainsaw and a wooden spoon. I mean, they didn't have the techniques they do now. And it was only like five or six or half a dozen years later, up into the early 80s, where arthroscopic surgery started to come in. But you think back, a guy like Gail Sayers, who devastating knee injury that he had, he only played in 64 games in the National Football League because of a knee injury. And, you know, you see things like that happen and how far things have come. But, yeah, Robert James, that's a good call.
Great one.
Really good call.
I'm sorry I missed that. I feel bad that I missed that. From the tweet sheet on this question, best undrafted rookie free agent in Bills history, we've got Brian Cook, who says, Fred Jackson may not be the best, but he was certainly one of the most beloved. It was downright depressing that year we released him, but I'm glad he retired as a Bill. That's a good point. Certainly Fred, in recent memory, last 10 years, maybe the most popular, one of the most popular.
Certainly
Buffalo
the most
Bulls.
Popular, yeah. And there's another one from Timothy Faluzzi. I'll say Kent Hull, even though Jackson is one of my favorite players. This is along your point. Kent was a Pro Bowler and a key reason why the Bills made four Super Bowl appearances and also helped Jim Kelly become a Hall of Famer. And you'll have Jim Kelly chime in on that as well. Jim will tell you he wouldn't have been the player he was without Kent. I've had a thing going on my Twitter account, at SteveTasker89, for the last few days. Somebody asked me about Jim calling his own plays. Yeah. Who called him? And they said, oh, Jim always did. And I said, well, where was it? Ted Marchabrota. I heard Kent Hull called plays. And I put it out there, and I kind of set the record straight as I remember it. Jim Kelly did call all his own plays, most of them. And when he'd go fast, it would go fast and fast, you know, because that was the nature of the no huddle. They were running a play every 16 seconds of real time. Not on the game clock, but every 16 seconds of real time, we were running a play at the peak of that. And Jim would call him fast. But if every so often he would get we had to signal him back then, the signal the plays in, and Ted Marchabrota would chime in. And if Jim got to a point where he wanted a new play on his list, or he'd get in, he'd call maybe three or four, five, six different plays in a row, he'd look over to the sidelines, and Teddy Marchabrota would give him something, would give him a play or a situation, or certainly in short yardage and goal line or third and long or something, he would go to a longer playlist and give Jim one of those plays off of an expanded menu. But there was only one player that had the ability to not really call a play, but to tell Jim not to run this play, certain play, and that was Kent Hull. And when Jim would call a play and start to bend down to get under the center, Kent would just flat turn around, look at him, and shake his head. And Jim would not even hesitate. He'd just tap him on the butt, and Kent would go back, and Jim would call a completely different play. He never, for even an instant, questioned what Kent said. It was the only player who ever did that. Now, that was the close relationship they had, and the respect that Kent had as well. Kent would tell, you know, Jim whatever he wanted to tell him, and Jim would listen. And that was the way it was with everybody in that locker room. Kent Hall was truly, if not a Hall of Fame football player, which I believe he was a Hall of Fame human being. We miss him dearly, but he was the only player that would do that. It had the not only the courage, but, you know, to stand up to a Hall of Fame in the making quarterback, but also, you know, the trust of the quarterback. So Kent would do that, and that was something that, you know, you talk about guys who came in and made a difference for a team who were not drafted. Kent Hall is high on that list here in Buffalo.
Is he the best undrafted rookie free agent in franchise history? Maybe. We'll talk more about that in the next hour of the show. Come on back for that. Give us your phone calls. Give us your thoughts. 803-0550. Toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550, or on Twitter. Vote in our Twitter poll or just weigh in via Twitter. It's at One Bills Live. That's the name of the show, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
The update from One Bills Drive. The Buffalo Bills veterans have come off the field. Their final day of the off-season conditioning program for this week. Still 5 or 6 weeks left, but the rookies hit the field tomorrow. Bills rookies, the 8 draft picks, and a dozen or more undrafted rookie free agents are on their way and arriving tonight. They'll be on the field Friday and Saturday for the Bills rookie minicamp that starts tomorrow. Monday Night Football kicking off its 49th season this fall, and ESPN is a new broadcast team. New play-by-play voice Joe Tessitore will handle play-by-play on Monday Night Football. Jason Witten, just off the field from the Cowboys, will be an analyst, along with Booger McFarland, and Lisa Salters will be the sideline reporter. Tessitore and Witten will be in the booth. Booger McFarland will bring a new perspective of the game, the first field-level analyst for Monday Night Football. He'll be right down there on the field. Dallas Cowboys say they plan to pay Dak Prescott what he deserves, and even though he came into the league as a mid-round draft pick, they're ready to up the ante. So far, the Cowboys have been reaping the benefits of Prescott, who is not paid that much, a $2.7 million four-year contract back in 2016. He's eligible for a contract extension after the 2018 season. Detroit Lions owner Martha Ford, the team president and the general manager, released a joint statement last night expressing support for head coach Matt Patricia after a story resurfaced in the Detroit News last night about a sexual assault charge against Patricia from 22 years ago. Patricia denies the incident, the accusation made while he was a student in college on spring break in 1996. New England Patriots offensive guard Joe Thuney will undergo foot surgery. The left guard prepping for foot surgery. The surgery not expected to threaten his availability for the upcoming season. And the Senior Bowl is parting ways with executive director Phil Savage, the former Browns general manager, hired to the Senior Bowl post in 2012. Is leaving. Stanley Cup hockey tonight, game 7 of the playoff series between Winnipeg and Nashville, coming up at Bridgestone Arena in Nashville tonight at 8 o'clock. That is the update from One Bills Drive. It is One Bills Live. John Murphy and Steve Tasker coming up later this hour. Going to hear some of the comments from Chris Mortensen from ESPN, who joined us yesterday. Had some incredible platitudes, some stuff that he said about Josh Allen, the Bills' first-round draft pick. We want to kind of replay for you in case you missed it yesterday. Cynthia Freeland, analytics expert from NFL.com, joins us coming up today at 2 o'clock. Steve and I here welcoming your phone calls at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What do you want to start with here, Steve?
Well, I've been thinking about there's a couple of things we can go to. First of all, we talked about yesterday about what the best way to handle these rookie quarterbacks is. Should you start them? Should you sit them? And there's a big article in Sporting News that intrigued me because they went back 15 years and looked at these top quarterbacks that were taken all the way back to Carson Palmer and what happened to them, how they were handled by their team, and how many games they got in, what the plan was, how it actually worked out, and what their first 10 games looked like for all of them. And, you know, you read through the whole thing, and it's pretty intriguing because you remember the names. Sure. And you kind of forget, like, Kyle Bowler's on this list. You kind of forget what happened to him. You know, he disappeared. Rex Grossman, remember, he took the Bears to the Super Bowl. But, you know, you start with Carson Palmer 15 years ago. He sat an entire year behind John Kitna and Cincinnati. Now, in the second year,
first
he got
round
in,
draft pick, he right, was
first pick,
Heisman Trophy winner.
He was the first pick, and he didn't see the field his entire first year, and he sat behind John Kitna as a journeyman.
Yep.
So you don't think the fans were beside themselves. But anyway, he comes in. His first 10 games, they were 4-6. You know, and then in year three, though, he goes to the Pro Bowl, 3-4. He's Pro Bowl quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals. And then you go, you know, Byron Leftwich, remember him. He started in the fourth game of his rookie season, and he took over for Mark Brunell, who was the iconic quarterback in Jacksonville. They benched Brunell, put Byron Leftwich in. He went 4-6, had 12 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, you know. And he never got better.
Right.
And so it lasts like 4 years. He was gone. So you go down this list, Kyle Bowler, he stunk. He was 5-5 in his 10 years. You know, Rex Grossman got to a Super Bowl with the Bears and went 7-3 in his first 10 games, and he was out of football a year or two later. I mean, so I don't want to bore you with this whole thing, but it goes to Eli Manning. He was 3-7. Phillip Rivers was 8-2 when he finally got in. Now, remember, he got drafted, and they already had Drew Brees. And when they drafted him and saying, I can tell you the whole story with this one, because they had Drew Brees, and he was, he wasn't that good.
He was just okay. Yeah.
In fact, they were moving on from him.
And here's only a year or two into it.
They were moving on from Drew Brees because they were pretty sure he couldn't play. And then when they drafted Phillip Rivers, Drew Brees, it lit a fire under Drew Brees that changed him. I was covering Drew Brees in San Diego when he's first year or two there. And he was, you know, he's a good kid. He was, yeah, he's liked it. He's, yeah, okay, I get it. Yeah, he's playing hard, whatever. But he was kind of playing golf. He was playing golf in the offseason and liked it and just spent a lot of time there. Then when they drafted Phillip Rivers, his whole countenance changed day in, day out. And then only after they drafted a different guy did Drew Brees turn into the quarterback who's going to the Hall of Fame, won a world championship, and throws for 5,000 yards 5 times in his career. Nobody else has done it more than once. It took the team to draft 2 quarterbacks, him and then his replacement before he got
good. And he got going still in San Diego, right?
Before that last year. Yes, that last year, that's when they drafted Rivers. He had one more year, and that's when he turned into the Drew Brees. And then the only reason he got out of San Diego, in my opinion, is because he hurt his shoulder right at the end of that really good season he had, and it turned into what it turned into. But, you know, and he's the reason Phillip Rivers had to wait a year or two before he took over and went 8-2 in his first 10 games. And, of course, Ben Roethlisberger, 10-0 in his first 10 games. Yeah. He got thrown in.
Barely throwing the ball.
In week 3, he got in. Tommy Maddox was a starter, suffered a major elbow injury in week 2. Roethlisberger went in, and he never looked back. He's gone on to win Super Bowls and been one of the all-time great Steeler players. And then J.P. Lossman's on this list. In this news Sporting News article, they kind of blame the team for never putting any pieces around him, which you can make a case for that, no question. He was 2-10 in his first 10 starts. So I don't want to keep going on
with
this.
What's the point, though? What's the common thread? You got J.P. Lossman, 2-8.
That's the whole point. There is no common thread. Some of these guys, they jump right. Ben Roethlisberger goes in 10-0.
Yeah,
you know,
Lossman goes 2-8.
Rex Grossman goes 7-3, and he stinks.
So the lesson learned is what?
Anything can happen? Ben Roethlisberger goes, yeah, it doesn't. There's no pat easy answer. Even Carson Palmer comes in his second year, struggled his first year. That 1 year of waiting didn't do him any good, didn't do the Bengals any good. He could have gone, 2-8 as a rookie. Why'd they hold him out? They held him out. Maybe he would have stunk even worse. I don't know. But you got all this list goes on, and all these guys got held out or they got thrown into the fire. You know, Alex Smith, he started 9 games as a rookie. But because they had Tim Rattay, Ken Dorsey, and Cody Pickett on the roster. Murph.
It was in San Francisco.
You're better than those guys.
San Francisco, that is?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the point is, and we've talked about it this week.
The point is there's no point.
We've talked about this week, what's the best way, what's the formula for plugging a rookie quarterback into your roster? From reading this Sporting News article, you're telling me there is no good way.
Favre,
there is no formula.
Brett Favre sat in front of Aaron Rodgers. So Aaron Rodgers gets drafted, and he lasts 3 complete full seasons. And then he comes in, and he goes 5-5 in his first 10 starts. But he goes 15-6, touchdown to interception. So he's playing actually pretty well. He's got a quarterback rating of 94.4. But he waited behind Brett Favre for 3 full seasons. Then you got Jason Campbell. He was a 25th pick of the draft. Redskins went with Mark Brunell and then Patrick Ramsey when he was a rookie. And then Brunell in the second year as well, until they finally said, okay, we're going to give Jason Campbell a chance to play. He went 4-6 in his first 10 starts. And, you know, I don't think his career was anything like a first-round draft pick and a quarterback, even if he was 25th overall. I mean, it's really interesting. It goes all
the
way.
Here's a point, maybe as I think about this. Some of those guys, not all of them, some of them did not have good starts, 4-6, 3-7. Right. Eli Manning, there were a couple others. But they stuck with him, went back to him, and turned into really good quarterbacks. So maybe the point, maybe if we're looking for a point here, maybe the point is throw out the rookie year. Don't worry about what your guy does in his rookie year. Evaluate him for who he is. Don't worry about wins and losses. And you might reap benefits down the road. But
that doesn't hold water, because you look back and you got Rex Grossman, who went 7-3 in his first 10 games. He's out of football in 2 years. Yeah. And then Vince Young goes 6-4 in his first 10 games. He didn't last 2 years in the league. He's out. Matt Leinart goes 3-7 in his first 10 starts, and he was a quality college quarterback. Jay Cutler, who had he could sling it, but he was like
He
lasted a long time in the league. He went 4-6 as a starter as well. I mean, the whole rainbow is out there for these quarterbacks. There's really no common denominator about how it looks.
And no formula to follow.
There's no formula. Every guy's different. Every team's different when the guy gets there.
Yeah.
The coaching staffs are different. It's so random that we can say, hey, you should sit him for a while. You know, I think what you got to do, and it sounds – you know, a little bit like common sense. Look at your kid that you draft. Get a sense of him. Is he ready to go in? And what's going to happen? Is our team ready to support him if he goes in there? Does he have enough pieces to win and look successful? And if he doesn't, if he's going to get out there like we had Bill Parcells on last week, if he's going to go out there and stink it up and we're going to lose 35-10 because of him, is it going to kill him? Is it going to crush his confidence? Is he never going to be the same?
Right.
If that's the case, don't put him out there.
Well, we talked about this a little bit. Lossman, who's on your list there, and I had a front row seat for that. Lossman, I knew it, and I'm on the outside. He was not ready to play when they threw him in there. He was nowhere near.
I love that you said that.
What?
He was not ready to play.
He was not ready to play. And anybody who thought he was deluding themselves. He was not ready to play.
So,
I don't understand that decision. I still don't. 10 years later, I don't.
Right.
We had JP on the show a couple months ago, and I kind of asked him that, and he essentially admitted, I had a lot to learn, I think is what he said.
So think back, if you can remember, what was the rationale for putting him in?
Somebody got mad at Drew Bledsoe.
Right?
I think that's what happened.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with the kid.
They had lost to the Steelers in that finale the year before. No, it didn't have anything to do with Lossman. I mean, Lossman wasn't ready. Everybody knew it.
See, it has to be about that kid. It has to be about that quarterback.
And the team.
And the team around him. And your coaching staff, they had to know. And plus, back then, when Lossman, it might have come down from the top. It might have come down from Donahoe and those guys that were running. Oh, from Ralph. Okay. So it might have come down. And listen, I know how that works. I've seen it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when that starts to happen and you take it out of the hands and the responsibility, even if it's the responsibility of the football people, if you take it out of their hands to make those decisions, you're headed down a road for problems.
Yeah.
And Lossman's a perfect example.
We went right down that road.
And then you go, like on this list, I mean, these guys, people are going to start going, oh, my gosh. Like Jamarcus Russell, 2-8, 7 TDs, 5 interceptions, 75.9 quarterback rating. He got sacked 30 times. He's on the list for the biggest drafts busts in NFL history.
Sure.
Then it goes down to Brady Quinn. Now, he couldn't beat out. Now, when he was with Cleveland, they had a real competition. They were going to let the best guy win kind of thing. Okay, so he gets beat out by Charlie Fry, or he couldn't beat out Charlie Fry or Derek Anderson in Cleveland. But he showed enough in his rookie offseason, and the team traded Fry. Anderson was a Pro Bowler in 07 and was the starter when he was healthy until halfway through the season. And then Quinn got his chance. He went 1-9 in his first 10 games.
There's a million different ways to do it.
And there's nothing that says one way is going to be better. It all depends on that guy. Matt Ryan's on this list. Joe Flacco's on this list. Matt Ryan's 6-4 in his first 10 games. Joe Flacco 6-4 in his first 10 games. You know, both those guys got to a Super Bowl. Matt Ryan's now the highest paid quarterback in the league, you know. And he's been – and like we said yesterday at the end of the show when we were talking about that, these contracts come out and they get paid because of what they've done.
Yeah.
And that's what Matt Ryan has done. He has really solidified that franchise at that position for now going on, what is it, 6-8 years now. This is his third contract, isn't it?
I believe it is,
yeah, it's a third chance to sign a contract, and I think, you know, that's what they're paying him for. But he's been that much of a difference from what they were looking at in years past.
Hey, I want to talk about another quarterback, not a rookie, but a guy who's going to get a chance to start this year, Pat Mahomes. He talked to our buddy Jenny Vrentis from MMQB about Alex Smith. Now, Alex Smith is gone, obviously, from Kansas City. Mahomes is going to get the chance to start. But this came up early in the week. We kind of ripped up Ben Roethlisberger for some of his comments about Mason Rudolph. But listen to what Pat Mahomes told Jenny Vrentis about Alex Smith last year, about the help he got. Quote, this is Mahomes talking on Alex Smith. He's an awesome guy, a true pro. He had a great season last year, and he was always helping me whenever I did something he thought he could help me improve on. That's just the type of leader he is. We have a great relationship still going forward. It stands in opposition to Ben Roethlisberger's comments about Mason Rudolph, right? You know, if he needs help, I'll give him the playbook. You know, I'll show him where the playbook is.
Right, and a little bit to the cool reception Joe Flacco has given Lamar Jackson. I mean, the two up until a couple of weeks after he's been drafted, they hadn't even spoken. Alex Smith, and think about this though, Murph, and on the other side of that coin. Alex Smith is no longer in Kansas City. He might have helped Patrick Mahomes right into his seat, right?
Sure.
That's what ultimately what happens, and that's why Ben Roethlisberger and Brett Favre with Aaron Rodgers and Joe Flacco with Lamar Jackson, these teams, they have these guys come in, and it's like, I don't know. And Drew Brees with Philip Rivers, like we just spoke about a few minutes ago. They don't like it. And Alex Smith, while he was magnanimous about it, Alex Smith has been put through the ringer in his career in a lot of different ways. Remember, he was halfway through a Super Bowl season and got benched for Colin Kaepernick. And then ended up in Kansas City and had some great years there and some great games there and did a lot for that franchise. He's out again for another younger quarterback. And to have him say, you know what, I'm going to help this guy, it says a lot about who Alex Smith is. But it also says a lot about why the reasons these old quarterbacks don't like young quarterbacks coming into the room.
Yeah. There's one
they
more thing.
They get replaced.
One more thing about Roethlisberger, and Jenny Vrentis, MMQB, pointed this out. And you mentioned Roethlisberger, 05, replaced Tommy Maddox. And when that happened, did you come across this? Roethlisberger thanked Tommy Maddox. He said, Maddox helped bring me along. The quote was, this is Roethlisberger. He'll meet me halfway out on the field to answer a question. I owe so much of my success to his help. Roethlisberger told USA Today that in 05. Again,
I don't think Ben remembers that.
I don't think he does either. And I do think, and we said yesterday, I admitted yesterday, we probably overplayed it 2 days ago about what a bad guy Roethlisberger was.
Or sounded like.
Sounded like, yes. I don't think he's being that bad. He probably hasn't had a chance to meet the rookie yet, right?
Some of his worst quotes, he was said, when you hear him audio, when you read them, they're bad. When you hear them audio, it's not so bad because he's chuckling a little bit to them and like that. So I think there's not going to be any issues between the two of them when they finally do get together. But let's face it, Ben's ego showed through in that interview. He doesn't like being
more than what he said about Mason Rudolph that got my attention was how he twice in the last couple of years talked about the end of the road, retirement, maybe I should retire. And then all of a sudden he's talking about I want to play 4 or 5 more years, right?
3 to 5, yeah.
I mean, which is it, Ben? You know, I mean, you can't say it one way and then be mad when the team kind of backstops you. And, look, they're always looking to replace guys, right? And if you're not if you're not looking to replace your guys on the roster, you're not doing your job.
You're not looking to improve, and that's what you're always after. It's really been interesting to see how this all shakes out. But, you know, I hadn't really thought about it because we talked about this Alex Smith thing before the show, and he laughed. Now it seems crazy. He got replaced by the guy he was helping.
Yeah.
And now it's like that's why
these old don't help.
That's why you don't help him, right? I mean, that sounds crazy, but I don't think Alex Smith's too unhappy because he's making a good buck with Washington. He's got another team that are going to give him a chance to win, and I think that's really interesting. With the stuff coming out, because we for the last 3 days we've been talking about it, and yet here again is another instance of an older established quarterback being replaced by a younger guy, and how three different guys have handled it. And I think you got to tip your hat to Alex Smith for being so magnanimous to a young guy like Patrick Mahomes for a team he knew too. He was sitting there as their quarterback, and they jumped up in the first round, made a big blockbuster trade to draft him, and then of course as per usual, when an old quarterback gets threatened with his job, they come out and they looked like the best team in the history of football in the first six games last year. I mean, they went in on opening day of the season and crushed New England. I mean, really jumped all over them. And for that first 6 weeks, I didn't – the thing was, and I told this to you, Merv, I knew Kansas City was in trouble going 6-0 in the first six games because they looked so good. There is no way, and I know from experience and from covering the league for a long time, you can't keep that up for 16 weeks.
Yeah.
I knew they were going to go into a swoon. Now, I didn't know it was going to look like it did, where they just kind of went off the air for 2 months. But I knew it was going to be difficult to duplicate those performances. And maybe there is something to the fact that Alex Smith saw him draft that kid middle of the first round, the top 10, and he said, you know what, he's not taking my job, and he comes out and plays like he did in this first month and a half of the season.
Hey, our Twitter poll today is interesting. We're getting a lot of feedback on this too, Steve. Our Twitter poll today deals with the fact that Bills rookies are on their way here. They'll be on the field tomorrow. That includes the 8 draft pick. It also includes the undrafted rookies, a dozen or more coming in. Those names will be announced, we anticipate, later today. Who's the best rookie undrafted free agent in franchise history? Got good response on Twitter, more than 1,600 votes, and it's close. 42% say Fred Jackson, best rookie undrafted free agent in Bills history. 41% say Kent Hull. 14% say Cookie Gilchrist. 3% have somebody else in mind. We didn't get all the names up there. We couldn't, but there are others, including Tony Green and Robert James and Cookie Gilchrist and Booker Edgerson and Pat Williams and Jason Peters. So let us know what you think. We'll take your phone calls on it. We'll talk about it there. Let's take a call from Art in Clarence, who's been waiting for a while. Art, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. Great. Thank you.
I have some thoughts about Robert James. I was wondering, his name is right on the wall. I don't know how you didn't.
I'm an idiot. That's how I missed it. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I kept saying. But anyway, a couple things I remember about him that were amazing. First of all, he was the best bump and run corner at that time. He was phenomenal. And in his rookie year, he was just as good as Steve in covering kickoffs.
Hmm.
He was phenomenal. I remember Van Miller one time saying, boy, that Robert James, every kickoff, I just watch him because I know he's going to make the tackle.
Hmm.
And it was amazing that he was, to say he was just as good as Steve is saying a lot.
Appreciate that.
Another player I that hasn't been mentioned yet, he's probably not the best free agent, but he's probably one of my favorite free agents, and that is Shane Nelson.
Well, he was a draft pick, though, wasn't he?
No. He had a tryout for – he was a walk-on for – well, he had a tryout for Dallas and and Buffalo, and he picked Buffalo. So, and I remember his rookie season in preseason, he was intercepting every pass that was being thrown. He was always in the right place at the right time. And of course that led to him starting in the lineup, which led to the Bermuda Triangle. But, those two players, Robert James and Shane Nelson, I mean, that gives away my age. And also, I think those were two of the most devastating injuries in Bills history.
Yeah. Robert James, yeah. Hey, it's a good one, Art.
Thanks, Art.
You're right. That's another bad one on me. Shane Nelson was a really good player, Steve, and he's right. Art's right. I'm just going to read you from his bio. Discovered in an open trial held by the Cowboys, the only player to be offered a contract, but he turned down the Cowboys' offer, signed with the Bills. Felt like he had a better chance of playing. Do you remember that name? He was a linebacker from Baylor. He played
with a couple of guys with Fred Smirlis and Jim Haslett. Bermuda Triangle. That was a great defense.
But I forgot that he I should have put more thought into this.
It's a lot of history. It's over 50 years of history. It's hard to go back and get all those guys.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Robert James obviously is a good one too. A couple of tweets on this too from the tweet sheet on who's the best undrafted rookie free agent in Bills history. From Dan V, I have all the love and respect in the world for Kent Hull, but it is without a doubt Fred Jackson because he achieved all of his accolades without having a Hall of Fame cast around him.
Yeah.
Well, that's the argument, I guess, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Kent Hull played on a great team with great teammates.
Yeah, and also from Scott on Twitter sheet, the tweet sheet, this question has a generation component to it. It's all about the year you identify with. I love Fred Jackson, but it's a stretch to say he was better than Kent Hull, a multiple Pro Bowl and borderline Hall of Famer. Cookie didn't play long enough. I'm going with Hull. And you're right. Cookie Gilchrist, when you look at his career, that's the one thing that you miss is the fact that he only played a couple of years, not less than a handful of years. But you're right, Kent Hull, I think in the history of the game and the history of the franchise, Kent Hull made a bigger impact. But Freddie, for the time he was here, was not just a good player. He was the face of the team. He was the guy. He was the guy that people identified with our team. He was the fans' favorite.
But not a good team.
It was a bad team.
Yeah.
That's no question. That I think, detracts from him. And his claim to being the greatest undrafted free agent in Bills history, although he's got to be in the conversation.
One more from the tweet sheet from I Am Legend. We're asking, who's the best undrafted rookie free agent in Bills history? I Am Legend says, first player I thought of, Jason Peters. In my opinion, he's better than everyone on the list. Maybe Cookie, but he played before my time when the game was totally different.
I don't know that he was the greatest on the list. He maybe had the greatest career, but it was only four years with Buffalo.
Yeah.
Right? It wasn't a long enough career. It's like Cookie Gilchrist a little bit. He might have been the greatest guy ever, but not with Buffalo and not for this team.
All right. Good points. Maybe, as I said going in, I know I missed a few. Shane Nelson, Robert James among them. Maybe I've missed others. Give us a call. We'll talk about that. We're also going to talk more about the Bills and their draft, right, when we come back. We'll hear some of Chris Mortensen's thoughts on that. He joined us on the show yesterday. Coming up at 2 today, Cynthia Freeland from NFL Network. Come on back. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
But yeah, I'm high on him. He's a great kid. He's smart, and I don't think he's. People say boom or bust, and I don't think it's boom or bust with him. I think it's got a much greater chance of being boom, or he'll just be a really good starting quarterback in this league.
Voice of Chris Mortensen, our guest yesterday, talking about Josh Allen, Buffalo's first round draft pick. It's not boom or bust, he says. As you pointed out, nobody on the show, and we've talked about, it's been, 2 weeks from today was the draft, 2 weeks ago today.
Right.
Talked about Josh Allen essentially every day since then. And that was the praise that he got from Chris Mortensen yesterday, tops the list. I mean, he was all about Josh Allen.
If you want to get on board with Josh Allen, if you want to be talked into how good he could be and all that, if you want to get excited about him, if you don't know anything about him, go back and listen. We're going to show you. We're going to play some of that a little bit. Are we going to play some of that?
Yeah, we got more.
All right. Go back and listen to this entirety. It's like a 20-minute interview by Chris Mortensen. And it's like you're talking to his dad. I mean, it's, right?
It was.
Oh, my gosh.
It was.
Chris Mortensen was unbelievably on board with Josh Allen.
And, let me say, it's one thing to have Josh Allen's offensive coordinator, who we had earlier this week, Brett Vegan, talk about him like that,
right,
or to have his head coach talk about that, or some of the others who are close to him, Jordan Palmer, right, on the show talking about him.
Jordan Palmer worked with him.
I got thinking, what does Chris Mortensen, what's his stake? He has no stake. He has no, anything to gain by pumping up Josh Allen. I think he's a truth teller for the most part.
He's got no skin in the game.
Yeah.
And he also is one of those guys that's, we always love talking to him because he takes great pride in the fact that he knows general managers, he knows scouts, he knows people, and that's kind of how he makes his living with his connections throughout the league. He can make phone calls and talk, people take his call. Executives take his calls and they answer questions from him because they trust him with the information. And so he comes on our show yesterday and starts talking about all these guys he's spoken to, offensive coordinators from teams that faced Josh Allen, like Mike Bobo, the offensive coordinator for Colorado State, who played in the NFL and who coached guys like Matthew Stafford. And he played on the guys who were on the same college team with Ben Roethlisberger, guys who, watched this stuff, all the Peyton, the Manning Passing Academy, all the guys down there. He talks to all those scouts and coaches and workers and volunteers down there, guys who just go to watch. He talks to all these guys, and he compiles his opinions from all the opinions of that they say. And he's got a great recall. because he remembers conversations about specific guys and who he was speaking to and why they should know what they're talking about. And he went on and on about Josh Allen and about how different. I think that's the thing that jumped out at me, Murph. You know, Josh Allen stood out among all these guys that got drafted this year, all these quarterbacks that we spoke about from Mason Rudolph all the way up to Baker Mayfield. Josh Allen is the one that when they all got on the field together, everybody around him went, wow. And that wasn't just coaches, scouts, players, executives. It was the other quarterbacks too.
Yeah, he said Josh Allen threw the ball and a couple people were like, whoa, this is different.
That's different. That guy's different.
What do you know about the Manning Passing Academy? I looked it up.
I want no part of it. I know that.
It's coming up June 21st. Through the 24th in Louisiana, Thibodaux, Louisiana, at Nicholls State University. So I don't know if that's New Orleans. It's close. It's 20 years long. They've been doing it for 20 years. Do you have to get invited to it, do you think?
Yeah, I think you do.
I don't know. It might just be a camp.
You get invited to it, and they have guys that come in and actually act as counselors too. You remember because Johnny Manziel got kicked out that one year when he was a counselor.
That's right. Archie Manning, it's a Manning thing. Archie Manning, executive director. Cooper Manning, his son, senior assistant director. Peyton, senior assistant director. Eli, senior assistant director. And then looks like a bunch of coaches.
And this is what it is at the Passing Academy, it is a high-level PhD, master's, no, maybe not a PhD, it's a master's course in quarterback development and what a quarterback needs to know about his team and how to play quarterback to be effective. And it comes down to skills, and it comes down to learning ability, understanding defenses and where your eyes look and your footwork and your everything from soup to nuts about what it takes to be a great quarterback.
1 week camp, though. I don't know much about it. I don't know how you get invited to cover it. I'd be interested in that.
I don't think it's closed. Because obviously guys like Chris Mortensen and other guys, scouts and everybody, they go down and hang around. It sounds like they just kind of watch.
Yeah.
Either they're up in the stands or whatever. But I know this, Peyton Manning and Eli are on the field, hands-on, and they're talking to guys. And I know that there are other prominent quarterbacks there as well, either current or former as well. And they have high-level conversations about, you know, you can imagine, or maybe you can't imagine, the verbiage and the language that quarterbacks like Eli Manning and Peyton Manning use when they're talking about defenses and how to run and, you know, you get Drew Brees and other guys into that mix and quarterback coaches. If you stood there and listened to them talk for 15 minutes, you'd understand about half of what they say because the words are so specific to the position of quarterback in the NFL and at the high level in college. So it's a prestigious academy, absolutely no question about it. It lasts an entire week, and I'm sure there are a lot of kids, guys who go there hoping to get asked to go there because it is – it says something about you, and it goes. Listen, if you're there, it goes right on your resume. If you're a quarterback, you've been.
Sure, you can't just sign up.
I have no idea. I have no idea, but I know this. If you go, you better have some self confidence because there's going to be some guys.
You better
there.
Have some game if you. Go.
Yeah, exactly. You better think you're all of that because there's some big time guys walking around that field. It's one of the premier.
yeah,
quarterback development camps that you could. Dream up, let alone attend.
I wonder what do you think the Mannings get out of it? Money? I mean, they're charging people to go to this camp?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I want to know more about the Manning Passing Academy. I want to know more. I'll find out. Well, maybe we'll get somebody on here to talk about it. One of the Mannings, Cooper. Cooper would come up.
I'll tell you what, what an outstanding guy. He's a great dude.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah. Working on that.
All right.
It was last year at the Manning Passing Academy, last June, that Chris Mortensen formed these opinions about Bills' Josh Allen. In fact, he talked to us about it yesterday. Chris Mortensen telling us what he saw from Josh Allen at last year's Manning Passing Academy.
Peyton has said before, there haven't been many guys that have shown up that you said, oh, that's different. And it's funny because I think other than, you know, since Josh Allen, before that, the last time he really said that about a guy was Matthew Stafford. In terms of that's different. And, you know, the Chicago Cubs general manager, I forgot his name, and it's not Theo Epstein, was there because he was a friend of one of Eli's college classmates. And we were sitting in the stands watching him. He says, man, that guy's got gifts. He goes, that's gift. You're born with that. And so, So they're and listen, and they had the quarterbacks around them, and it was a talented group, and there were a lot of guys who threw the ball well, moved around well, but you could tell they were, you know, they were very impressed. And the other thing about Josh that they find out, I think, is that he's not afraid to compete. In fact, I think he likes to compete. Well, I think he knows he's gifted, but he likes to compete, and I think it was evident at the Senior Bowl when, okay, you start off a little shaky. Listen, mentally, the mental toughness is there because he gets better each day as opposed to, uh-oh, I just had a bad day, everybody's on me, you know, and they kind of shrink. Josh doesn't shrink from criticism.
Chris Mortensen on Bill's first-round draft pick, Josh Allen. That last part in the interview yesterday with Mortensen is what got me really excited about Josh Allen, the competitive part. Because, look, there were five quarterbacks in the first round. They're all talented. They all have strengths. They all have weaknesses. But the fact that this guy is set apart a little bit because of his competitiveness, I like that a lot. Because this is a guy who's been already criticized by even Bills fans who didn't like the draft pick, but even going into the draft about the 56% completion percentage last year at Wyoming. So he's got that to fight up, you know, to butt up against. He's got, you know, people just doubting him where he fit. You know, boom or bust, you know. Mortensen says he's not boom or bust.
Yeah.
I love the fact that he likes to compete. And he's right about the Senior Bowl, right? Left the game and talked his way back into the game
in the second half
so he could play better than he played in the first half.
I'll tell you, it's interesting you said that about the competitiveness. And I'm thinking back, because once these guys get drafted and they start playing, you kind of, you know, unless they do something outstanding, you think, wow, that was a heck of a throw. Or look at that guy. Or you don't really don't compare them to each other anymore. You can compare them to whether they win or lose, or whether a team looks good or whether they don't. And I remember you thinking about competitiveness, and I sat on the sidelines on a lot of great games, and I remember watching my guy Jim Kelly play. And when you start talking about real players like Jim Kelly and Dan Marino, you start talking about things other than the fact that they can throw the ball a mile, and where you start talking about how tough Jim was and how bad he wanted to win. I mean, he wanted to win. And I looked across the field, and I'd see a guy like Danny Marino, and that was what Danny was like too. He competed. He wanted to win. And he didn't care who he had to yell at or what throw he had to make or what play he had to call. He was going to run it, and he was going to compete to win. And it's one of the, you know, the things that – it's kind of in the mix of all those things. You talk about a guy like Matt Stafford, who to me, and I've seen him play a lot, he's one of the great quarterbacks in the league today, and he's playing for a really bad franchise. They have not been able to get out of their own way. They can't keep a team together. They can't put it together and hold it together. They can't win consistently for whatever reason. I think it comes from the top down. And Matt Stafford is a phenomenal quarterback. He is a gritty, tough, hard-nosed competitor. And he's playing with on a team that's never really been able to put it together around him. There are guys like that around. But when I see Stafford play, he's got all that stuff, this physical ability. But the thing that you like about him is the person and the competitor he is. And so I'm kind of intrigued by that too, because we, you know, we're always talking about, gosh, I just hope he can complete a bigger number of his passes. You know, I hope he can, you know, read a defense. I hope he can make all these throws. I see he's big. But really, you want that guy to be smart and committed, and you want to win. Because everything else, he'll work on.
Yeah. And if he's committed to winning, committed to working on it, and as competitive as Mortensen describes him, that 56% completion percentage will fade away. You know what I mean?
Well, that's what he'll compete against.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna start completing these passes.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he'll work on it. And that's, you know, I said it a couple of times during the draft process. Smart guys always get better. Smart guys always, particularly the ones with passion that want to win, they're going to work hard to get better, whatever it takes. And their ability or their desire to do all the stuff that they're not good at, all the stuff that's no fun to do, that's what separates them. Their willingness to do all that stuff that makes them uncomfortable, or the ones where they got to start here because they stink so bad being a quarterback in this respect of their game, they got to work on it. And they do. And all of a sudden, they're pretty good at it. You know, after an off season, or after a year and a half, or after a regular season and an off season, wow, they're not so bad at that anymore. Now they can do it. That's what sets them apart. And that's, you know, that's why it's intriguing to hear guys talk about his competitive level.
Now, the problem is, Steve, for us, is that those rookies are on the field tomorrow at noon when we're on the air. Now, we hope to be able to get some video from the rookie mini camp, but it won't be the as serious as it gets. It won't be the biggest parts of tomorrow's workouts. It'll be stretch and right. some individual.
Here's what we'll do.
But you at least you'll be able to see Josh Allen and the rest of the rookies in a Bills uniform on the practice field on this show tomorrow.
We can make a deal. For 12 to 12:30, you go out and watch.
All right.
I'll take the first half hour of the show. Then I'll go out and watch.
I would do that. You want to do
that? I'm so curious.
We better ask our producer. Our senior producer, Jay Harris.
Ask his forgiveness. Don't ask his permission.
By the way, Jay. I was just looking at his it is senior producer. I never realized that. He's only been here, like the rest of us, a couple of years, but he's a senior producer.
Everybody's senior to me. I'm here. This is my second week.
But I would do that tomorrow if you want.
I know. We got to do that. We got to find a way. We got to work our magic.
Because I want to see the kid throw it. I want to hear it. I want to hear the ball. In fact,
just you said that a bunch. You just want to hear
it. I want to hear that. That a ball makes when it's
I want
well
to
thrown.
See. Listen, even if you can't hear it, I want to stand across the field and when a guy catches catches that 10-yard out or that deep comeback and that ball sizzles out there and he puts his hands up to catch it and his hands recoil.
Yeah,
you know when the ball takes his hand 6 inches towards his head.
Yeah.
Because of the velocity.
I'll take that too. And the sound that makes.
I'll get a warm
How about
fuzzy
the sound the ball makes.
I'll get a warm fuzzy feeling when I see that. You know,
we got a break here. We've got more coming up. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Steve Tasker on Buffalo Bills Radio. Show we call One Bills Live. It comes from One Bills Drive from Newer Field, our next door neighbor here. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. We're in the front end of the Ad Pro Sports Training Center in our One Buffalo studio doing the show. We're here until 3. Cynthia Freeland from NFL Network joins us coming up after the top of the hour. Tomorrow should be a good show. Dan Orlovsky is going to be on the show with us tomorrow. Steve, you know him. You met him at the CBS thing.
He's my new friend. He was at the CBS bonding thing we did in Chattanooga,
did you
Tennessee.
Bond?
Yeah. We actually rode from Atlanta to Chattanooga in a car together.
Well, that's bonding.
And, it was along with Gary Danielson, the SEC analyst.
That's big-time bonding.
Right, so we were talking, we were yucking it up. He's fresh out of the league. He was in training camp with the Chargers last year, and then he decided that he didn't get picked up. He didn't make that team. So after the season went through and he didn't get picked up on him, he just retired. He's 13-year career. He's now getting into this stuff that we're doing. I don't know, radio analyst. He's trying to find a place, a platform to – And he's actually really good. He's breaking down some plays, putting them out on Twitter. That got him out there. And now he's – I think he's going to – maybe this is the reason he got a chance to go to this CBS thing, that CBS Sports might be extending him an offer. He may be already signed with them. I don't know. But he's on their list, short list of guys that they may bring on board to help him out with their coverage of football and stuff on CBS Sports. So Dan Orlovsky, a guy – former quarterback in the NFL, played with Peyton Manning, played in camp with Philip Rivers this last year. Good guy, and I'm glad he's going
to
come on.
I'll be interested to hear what he says about Josh Allen. We had him on the show about 2 weeks before the draft. In fact,
I remember.
It was called to our attention. You weren't. I don't think you were here yet, right?
I heard the interview, though.
He was pretty critical of Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. Didn't see stuff, didn't pick up some
Yeah, and he was.
Reads.
We talked about it all the way from Atlanta to Chattanooga.
When you were bonding.
Yeah, while we were bonding, and I – It kind of hindered our ability to do that.
That was not good bonding. Yeah. When you talk
after they took it was after they took him. It was the day. It was the next day.
But he still maintains that. I'm certain.
Yeah,
right?
he thinks he's got some issues that can't be fixed.
Cannot be fixed.
Yeah.
Dan Orlovsky tomorrow on the show. We'll
and
hear.
So did Adam Archuleta.
Yeah.
So it'll be fun to hear him.
Did you bond with him? Or you already pre-bonded?
Adam was the European captain, and I was the USA captain, so we did not bond.
who's had good things to say about him? One of our callers on the line, Jeff in Orchard Park, remembers this, another guest on the show. Jeff, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hi, John. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
I remember you had Mr. Phil Simms on not too long ago, and he liked Josh Allen. It was his number one pick also, I guess.
Yeah, we had him on, I believe,
right.
The day after the draft. No, the day before the draft, Phil Simms. The day of the draft, I think we had him on draft day 2 weeks ago today.
Yeah, before the draft began,
right
on prime time,
draft.
I think we had Phil Simms on during the day. You're right, Jeff.
Yeah, he said he liked the way the ball came out of his hands and stuff like that.
Right. Well, here's the thing, Jeff. Here's what a lot of the proponents of Josh Allen are saying about his inaccuracy. And what they're saying is, listen, don't believe the 56% completion percentage because – the offense that he ran in Wyoming was not conducive to him completing a lot of balls. It was hard. They asked him to make hard throws. He never got any easy completions. And his supporting cast around him actually deteriorated from his first year as a starter to his second year. They lost a handful of really good players, important players on that offense. So he was actually all they had. So they think because of the fact that his offense was structured to push the ball down the field, sometimes in bad weather, and he had one game in the bowl game where he was 9 of 19, he had five throws that were in tight windows, perfectly thrown. All of them were dropped. That changes his numbers quite a bit, but they don't get credit for those drops. Those go as incompletions. So all of that kind of stuff, plus you've seen the guy in person and watching his offense. Phil Simms maintained that, listen, I think the guy would have completed, 75% of his balls if he was running an offense like OU ran, where, 30% of the balls were 100% completion rate because they were only – 5-yard passes, like Baker Mayfield, that kind of thing. So there's that. His critics will say he doesn't complete enough passes. His proponents will say, he wasn't built or he wasn't set up to be successful in that statistic.
Hey, Steve, we talked a little bit earlier this hour about how a veteran quarterback can help a rookie quarterback in the various examples. We talked a lot about, Alex Smith in Kansas City. But someone on Twitter raised a question right for you about your old teammates.
Trade Up Jack, who actually tweets us a lot, he says
he's always got good stuff too.
Yeah, as far as our quarterback mentoring young guys, how was Jim with Todd Collins in 1995? Bills took Collins in the second round. Jim could probably see the end of the road. We know you were there, Steve, and I was there, no question. And Jim was in the big picture. Jim was absolutely unthreatened by Todd Collins. He was a second round draft pick. And the moment he stepped on the field, Jim knew he was no threat. And also the thing that comes out of it a lot of times, Jim busted Todd Collins' chops.
Yeah, I recall
a lot.
That.
One of the
merciless.
One of the great things he did, and I wish I would have thought of it, but Jim did.
Oh no!
He came up to Todd and said, "Hey, Todd, I got a foundation. We're a charity. I want you to sign this helmet for my charity auction." So Todd dutifully autographs this Buffalo Bills helmet and said, "Hey, Jim, thanks." Well, Jim didn't tell him that it was actually his helmet that he took off of his locker and took it and let him. So Todd Collins comes out to practice and he's wearing a helmet with his own autograph on it. Oh my gosh, we roasted him. And that kind of thing, it's harmless and it was fun. But that's the kind of, Jim was merciless with him at times, but it was all good natured. Jim, I don't think Jim might have been a little bit insulted by it. I don't know. But he came across, he knew when they got on the field, he wasn't losing his job to Todd Collins.
He didn't feel threatened?
No.
What do you mean insulted? By what? By the fact that they were
by the fact they thought Todd Collins could actually possibly come in and replace him.
Oh, okay.
Given his level of skill.
Wow.
And Tom was a great dude. I liked him. He was a good kid, good teammate, and he came in it was what it was. I mean, you saw when Todd Collins started for the team in 1997, you saw why Jim was unthreatened.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a little bit of a drop-off.
That's the most negative thing Steve Tasker has ever uttered.
He was great, but he wasn't. He was no Jim Kelly, even in Jim Kelly's 11th or 12th year, he was not Jim Kelly.
All right, good question and a good answer, and we've got more to come. One more hour to go. Come on back. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
The update comes to you from One Bills Drive, where the Buffalo Bills veterans wrapped up their off-season workout session today. That'll end this week. 3 weeks in the book, 6 weeks left to go. But tomorrow, more workout participants on the field. The rookies are on their way. Some of them have arrived already. Draft picks, all 8 of them, and most of the undrafted rookies scheduled to be here for a weekend worth of workouts. That starts tomorrow on the field here in Orchard Park. Monday Night Football kicks off its 49th season this fall, and ESPN puts a brand new broadcast team on the air. A new play-by-play voice, Joe Tessitore. New analysts, Jason Witten, the former Cowboys tight end who just retired from the league, and Booger McFarland, who's been around ESPN for a while, and reporter Lisa Salters returns. ESPN is going to put McFarland on the sidelines a new perspective to the game's first field-level analyst for Monday Night Football, Booger McFarland, starting this year. Dallas Cowboys say they will pay Dak Prescott what he deserves. Dak Prescott, the quarterback, still on his rookie deal. He's quite the bargain for the Dallas Cowboys, but the Cowboys say that they are ready to step up to the plate and pay him what he deserves. Tough story in Detroit, where Lions owner Martha Ford, the team president, and the general manager all released a joint statement last night expressing support for head coach Matt Patricia after a sexual assault charge against him filed from 22 years ago resurfaced in a report in the Detroit News. Matt Patricia denies the accusation made by a woman while Patricia was a 22-year-old college student on spring break. The case that was originally filed against him was dismissed. Patricia says there's no truth to it at all. Tom Brady's offensive line with another hit this offseason. Left guard Joe Thuney getting ready for upcoming foot surgery, not expected to threaten his availability. Senior Bowl executive director Phil Savage announced last night that he is departing the Senior Bowl. The former Cleveland Browns general manager ready to move on after running the Senior Bowl for the last 6 years. And Peyton Manning's part of a potential ownership group for the Carolina Panthers as they go up for sale. Stanley Cup hockey, the Predators and Jets game 7 tonight. Winner advances to the Western Conference Finals against the Vegas Golden Knights. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Steve Tasker with One Bills Live. And joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, one of our favorite guests. She does NFL analytics plus some other sports as well for NFL Network. You can see her on game day morning on Thursday Night Football. She does a lot of fantasy football too. Cynthia Freeland on the line with us. Cynthia, it's John Murphy and Steve Tasker, our new co-host here in Buffalo. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, it's so great to be there, and nice to meet you, Steve. Well,
nice to meet you. Nice to have you on. I like having analytics people on because they give us great insights that nobody ever thought about. You also spent a lot of time on this draft, did you not?
I did. Tons of time on the draft.
What was your most interesting impression about how the draft shook out in the top 10?
I think this year, and I know every year it kind of, right before the draft, it feels like there's a lot of, like, misleading stories or people trying to sort of posture to, you know, oh, we're trading up, well, we're not, like, you know, false stories kind of emerge right at that, you know, 23rd hour. And I think this year more than any, it was like crazy trades that were actually proposed but like never materialized. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I know the Browns were trying to trade out of four, like with a lot of, you know, with a lot of different people, and it didn't work out. So they ended up picking the person they wanted, but they took him at four, and they, you know, anyways, it was just an interesting posturing this year.
Cynthia, I wonder from an analytics standpoint, when you look at some of those draft picks, and basically the only piece of evidence that people have ever worked with is the, you know, the draft value chart, right? Jimmy Johnson's draft value chart. But how do you evaluate these trades? Do you use that, or is there something else to look at when you look at draft day trades and trades involving draft picks?
You know, a lot of teams in their individual analytics departments try to come up with a way to sort of game the Jimmy Johnson trade value chart. But when you map things over time, it really has ended up being that Jimmy Johnson trade value is what people end up sort of using kind of overall. Now, you can say in the last minute, if someone's kind of getting desperate, they could give up more or less. But, you know, over the course of time, it does end up being that chart. So for me, to be honest with you, like, why try to game it when people end up using it anyways? Like, why change the market? That's what the market is. That's where you have to kind of, you know, do your dealings and hope you can get the person you want at the place that you want.
Now, the Bills, you know, made a couple of first-round trades, obviously, to move up. And
yep.
And the Josh Allen trade, when you ask them about the price they paid, they say quarterbacks are different. You can't use the Jimmy Johnson chart on quarterbacks. Do you think that's the case? Do you think that's kind of an accepted standard around the league?
I just think that leverage always comes into play. So
right. People
kind of knew the Bills were probably eyeing a quarterback. It seems like it was a very not well-kept secret,
yeah.
Right? You could tell by their by their moves prior to the draft. So for me, it was more like, okay, where can, like, what kind of leverage can you get? You know, you traded a little bit before and made some moves, like, back and forth. But I actually think that they ended up in a pretty good spot to get a quarterback, even though their cards were kind of on the table, right? People knew. So they did. I actually think it was a fine. It ended up working out fine.
So
I think they got better.
Yeah, let's talk, Cynthia, let's talk a little bit about the guy the Bills picked. And we've had Chris Mortensen on. We've had all kinds of people on.
Yeah,
you know,
I love Mort, my former coworker Mort.
There you go. So, you know, how did you rank these top guys, and, you know, what did you think of how it came out, and what do you think of the Bills guy?
interesting because the way I sort of the way I map things is different than other people. I don't rank people 1, 2, 3, 4 necessarily. I look at fit. So I try to see, like, I took 10 years of data about what happens in the NFL, and then I map things backwards. So instead of, like, a traditional scout who looks at people's college data and tries to project it forward, I kind of do it the other way, where I start with what happened in the NFL, what attributes did these quarterbacks or these any player, so, you know, what did they show on the field, and then what did we see from them in college, and how can you map it sort of backwards, so using historical context. And one of the best things about Josh Allen was his ability to connect with receivers in the red zone. So throwing two receivers in the end zone, he had 17 touchdowns last year, which actually led this quarterback class. Now, that could be something that maps well to what the Bills are trying to potentially achieve. Because last year, the Bills ranked 27th in red zone receiving touchdowns in the end zone. So that's kind of maybe what they're trying to select for, are attributes that could kind of change the way that they play a little bit. So things like that, where you try to find, like, sort of fits. Like, how does this puzzle piece fit into this specific, you know, situation? So that's more how I do it. And I think that if you look at development and you look at, you know, you have a lot of unknowns. We don't have a ton of NFL data on A.J. McCarron. We don't have a ton of NFL data, you know, obviously none on Josh Allen. So, you know, we don't even have a ton of data on Josh Allen against, you know, really formidable opponents. And by the way, he also had a pretty tough break with an O-line that wasn't very generous to him last year and some receivers that didn't help him out. So in my opinion, he's a ton of upside, but I don't think that his downside isn't people like, oh, he has so many unknowns, his downside, blah, 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 blah. I just don't think that's the case. I think they picked a guy who fits their system. In some ways, he has some Cam Newton-like attributes. He was actually more accurate outside the pocket than he was inside the pocket on certain types of plays, like third and long. So to me, there's that scrambling ability, that ability to make something happen. Those are things that your GM and your coach are very familiar with coming from Carolina. So I don't think it's as big of a downside. You know, people think, you know, risk only up and down, right? Like either you have a lot of risk or a lot of reward. But I actually think that I think it's been overestimated, the downside. And I think he has the potential to be excellent.
We're on the line with Cynthia Freeland, NFL Network analytics expert. She's on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with us. Cynthia, like most of us, now that these quarterbacks are all settled in their on their teams, you start to wonder who's going to play, who's going to get the starts. You did kind of an in-depth analysis this week about which rookie quarterback will make the most starts. Tell us how Josh Allen turned out, and how did you have him, you know, ranked? Who's going to get the most starts for their team this year?
So all stats people will tell you the error bars on this are huge. So for, like, you obviously, there's tons of time, right? We don't know. They're just going to rookie camp right now. And then you have, you know, OTAs. You have so much that happens between now and the beginning of the season. But when you look to see sort of tendencies with coaches in the past, and you look to see kind of where the player is in terms of what kind of resume they already have from college, and you kind of map all of those things together, and obviously opportunity, which means which team they landed on. I actually have Josh Allen with the second most potential starts. Now, he could have, if there's a lot of error here, again, it could be big upside, big downside, but you have to start somewhere. And for me, it's like, all right, A.J. McCarron's going to get a chance there, right? Obviously, some development, but I have him, second most starts kind of amongst these guys. Actually had Josh Rosen projected to start more games in Arizona.
Why Arizona? Why Josh Rosen in Arizona? Because I thought with a guy like Sam Bradley, is it just because Sam Bradley's fragility?
Between him, like their O-line, they did get Justin Pugh from the Giants, so that guard position should be a little bit better. But their O-line is leaky, and they rely a lot on intermediate passes last year. We saw that with especially like Larry Fitzgerald with the intermediate passes, and they'll get David Johnson back. So they can, if the run game does work out and they can keep Sam Bradford protected, but for me, Sam Bradford's like a pretty big wild card with his health. Like, you know, you didn't see him when he came back. He didn't look like he was 100%, so we don't know where he'll be. So for me, the upside there with Rosen, who is probably the most, you know, let's say his resume projects to be the most ready to play day one of any of the quarterbacks that were taken. Now, there's the Baker Mayfield consideration, but Cleveland has already said we're going to at least give Tyrod some starts. So for me, the Josh Rosen is a kind of total package of day one readiness based on resume attributes and the situation there, and that O-line being scary for Sam Bradford.
Hey, Cynthia, you also wrote an interesting you made an interesting observation this week about Sam Darnold, the third overall pick, and what a good spot he's in New York with the Jets. What makes that a good spot for him?
Well, I think that Josh McCown is really underrated. Last year, this time, if we can remember all the way back then, I think everyone thought the Jets were going to win maybe like two games. Like it was like, who's going to be picking first in the draft, right? The Jets or the Browns. And part of the reason they got five wins and part of the reason that they, in my opinion, like lessened their draft pick status and had to trade back up was because they ultimately won more games because of Josh McCown's ability under pressure. He was under pressure the fourth most of any quarterback last season, and yet he managed to have, in the top 10 in terms of passer rating under pressure, and his completion percentage was right up there in the top 10 too. So that's kind of, that passing under pressure is one of the most predictive stats in terms of wins, like one of the most highly correlated to wins stats for a quarterback. So if you look at what Josh McCown will be able to teach and show Sam Darnold, presumably, I obviously don't know what Sam Darnold's capacity for learning is, but if he can understand and learn from McCown and the system that he's in, that's like a really nice position. And, you do have Teddy Bridgewater there, he's a huge injury concern as well, but Bridgewater was excellent under pressure as well when he was healthy, obviously.
Cynthia Freeland from NFL Network on the line with us. And you also had a post about value picks. How do you define value picks? And tell me why the Patriots' first-round offensive lineman, Isaiah Wynn, qualifies as a value pick.
So for me, the parameters to be a good value pick was someone who you needed, like a positional need for your team, and you got him at a spot where many other people were projecting them to go higher, and they either fell to you, like, Derwin James fell to the Chargers, or you kind of got this like optimal position and person for the kind of whole statistical holes on your team, and you can fill them. So for Isaiah Wynn, like I think a lot of people, so part of the way that I did that was I take, a lot of the people who like Daniel Jeremiah and, Mel Kiper, like look at all of their mock drafts and kind of give an average sort of position or, ranking that this guy should fall between, 10 and 15 or 15 and 20, that kind of thing. And if you get them at a lower number, then presumably it's a value because you didn't have to trade up with anyone in order to get it. Now, I obviously don't know where every team, NFL team, has people placed on their draft chart, but ultimately, it's like, where did this, he's fallen, he's a great value. So for me, that was why Wynn became a good value because it was a need that they, like a true need that they had to fill, and someone with attributes that select for either above average potential, above average for them for that position. It was a lot of offensive guards and offensive centers, guards, tackles in this one, right, kind of compared to normal.
Sure.
Have you taken a step back and looked at the overall big picture, and have you seen teams that, we always talk about, hey, this team did great in the draft, this team did not do great in the draft. Is there a team out there that caught your eye with maybe give us both ends of the spectrum? Who ran the draft really well and who baffled you with their picks? And I say baffled because I want to be nice. Who stunk?
Yeah.
Which team stunk?
So let's go with the baffled first. I feel like, I was a former banker, right? So in my portfolio of assets, I like to have some risky and some safer and some, kind of like mix my asset allocation, if you will. And I feel like maybe Oakland went a little risky. I mean, Maurice Hurst, who was one of my top 10 in terms of true, what we saw from his resume and how that projects forward. But he fell for a reason. His medical condition, so that's a risky one. They took a lot of, in my opinion, strange risks. So they're going to be very boom or bust. Like, if these guys all work out, then it's going to be it could be great for them. But I feel like they took a lot of, they took a lot of character concerns, which I don't know how that maps out for them, if they think they can get past that. But that was they took a very risky approach compared to other teams. And then on the other end of the spectrum, I actually think the Packers had a really nice draft. For a team that's not picking in a very high spot, they didn't higher than they normally pick, but they kind of don't usually get to have their many good picks like this. They added a ton of picks. They kind of stocked up well, given that Aaron Rodgers' contract will likely be redone pretty soon here, and that one's going to be a – let's talk about Matt Ryan's contract being good. Aaron Rodgers' contract is going to be, I'm guessing, like 32 with like some like 31 guaranteed, something crazy like that, right? So and you have to kind of restock. So they really addressed their secondary. I love Josh Jackson. I thought that was a great pick. He's a corner from Iowa. He fell to the second round. I had a first round kind of potential for him. I thought they got better in places that they needed to as well and addressed it, because they're not going to be able to pay everyone given Aaron Rodgers' contract.
And Cynthia, you know what I really like about your analysis of the draft and coming as it does right now? Look, and you know this. I mean, you're an expert on game theory. The draft itself is a game, isn't it? I mean, we know stuff's got to happen on the field, but the draft and maneuvering around the draft, that's a game to play. Teams play it differently, don't they?
They do. And, you know, I wanted to say that I really like the Chiefs draft as well. It's just hard to like a draft when you're not picking until like second or third round.
Right. Yeah, right.
But they had some interesting picks because their tail end of picks, like, you know, their fifth, sixth, seventh round people, they're moving positions. So what they did was they actually valued people in like sort of a different way. Like they're moving one of the defensive players that they took. They're actually moving him to the offensive line, stuff like that. So you got a chance to see how they're taking some. See, in my opinion, first and second rounders are not where analytics people like me should spend the majority of their time. Like your coach knows. Those guys are expected to contribute. You know, first rounder, you got to contribute like day one, probably, unless you're a quarterback. But you know what I'm saying? You need someone to contribute. And then, so let the coach do that. But if you're talking like fifth, sixth, seventh round guys, like, why don't you try to be a little creative with how you could potentially use them and look for disproportionate upside? So I love what the Chiefs did with that. I think that's really cool and interesting. And it also kind of reinvigorates someone's career who maybe in their college system didn't get as much of a look just based on whatever, you know, not everyone can play for Nick Saban, right? So it's kind of an interesting way to look at it. And by the way, I'm way higher on Tremaine Edmonds going back to the Bills than other people. Like, I know he's young. I know there's some questions. I know, you know, what kind of, you know, based on what kind of linebacker you've seen them play, whatever. I think that was a great pick. Like, I think that one's going to be a good upside pick too. So for me, it's like, I don't know how coaches look at it, but like, I really like that pick, to be honest with you.
Yeah, a lot of people here in Buffalo did as well. He's as tall as a tree, and he runs really well, extremely well, 250 pounds, and he runs, you know, almost in the 4.440s. I mean, the guy's a freakish athlete. So, yeah, you got to think the upside is all there as well. But you're right. I mean, with all these draft picks, there's a lot of question marks. How do you – is there any way in your analytics and the way that you quantify things, is there any way to somehow capture – the intangibles that these guys have? Is there any way? I mean, that's the big kind of the holy grail, is it not, Cynthia, about picking who's going to be successful?
So, again, here's how I think, and every analytics department works differently, but here's how I think it works best. If you can be a catalyst to help those scouts be better at their job, so what you can do is what I've done with teams that I've been lucky enough to work with on these processes are to write down those intangibles and kind of grade them on a scale of, like, let's say 1 to 10. And then you have to normalize it over time. And, like, you know, if you ask a question like, is this guy a Bill? 1 to 10. 10 being yes, 1 being no. And every coach and every position coach, and you kind of overweight it. And you see distinct patterns over time. And you see from the scouts distinct patterns. And everybody has some sort of bias. So the idea is that you get enough information from people who are relevant to overcome the bias. Like, I'm sure you have specific, you know, you feel different about special teams than other people because you have an idea of what's the best thing for that, right? Like, I don't have that bias, so that's an advantage I have. You know, obviously I was a shutdown corner in my past life, but, you know, I don't have that bias, so it helps me to come from a position of, you know, I can take out some of these cognitive biases and I can say, well, you know, where are the downfalls? And someone's like, well, I really like this kind of running back, but here's where they could be vulnerable. That kind of thing. So to me, capturing the intangibles is like, you know, getting enough information and categorizing it by, like, your scouts are really smart. Like, I'm going to tell you, and by the way, like, I've been lucky enough to, like, some of your Bill scouts are some of my very favorite ones, and they're so smart, and I'll ask the question. I'll be like, what do you mean he's not overly fast? You know, like, what is, like, who has excess speed?
Right.
You know, like, is that a bad thing? Like, what are we talking about? So you know, ultimately it's about, like, asking the question to get it, like, they're really, you know, so everyone's speaking the same language, so you can be most helpful in categorizing that for someone like a coach to choose among. My goal is to always give someone, like, three high-quality options so that their eye can actually solve the problem. I'm not trying to tell them what they, like, when I help a team, I don't tell them an answer. I give them three things to choose from as opposed to making them look through eight things and then not knowing, you know, here are the three highest quality options. Spend the most of your time on these three. That's kind of the way I approach it.
Should work for a team. Have you ever been approached about working for a team, Cynthia?
I have.
What's stopping you?
Honestly, it has to be the right blend of the right coach and GM and owner and situation in terms of, because some teams don't have the cohesiveness you have at the Bills, where they like each other and know each other and they're actually on the same page. Okay. Many teams, especially teams who have, you know, probably the bigger need for analytics, they don't always see eye to eye. Their GM doesn't necessarily, they weren't hired in with their coach. They're not, you know, working together. They're kind of both doing their job separately. And it's just like any other business, right? Like if YouTube didn't have good chemistry on air, it wouldn't be a good show. We wouldn't like to listen to it. You know?
Yeah, so, right. We're working on that.
Murph and I just fist pumped, too. Yeah, it was
we're
great.
We're working on that. But thanks. Cynthia, it's always educational. We thank you so much for being with us here today.
It's great to meet you.
Great to meet you.
Thanks. Cynthia Freeland, analytics expert from the NFL Network, contributor to Fantasy Live and Game Day Morning on NFL Network. We thank Cynthia for joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh. Yeah, I'm not surprised she's been approached by teams. Bills just hired a new analytics guy, right, a couple of months ago, Luis Guillomo, now working with the Bills. I haven't met him yet, but he's in the building doing football analytics. I'd pay money to learn what role he played in the recent draft 2 weeks ago. I bet he had to have some role to play, right? I
mean,
he was
no
advising
doubt.
The Bills a little bit last year, but now he's a full-timer. But they had to put him to work, I would think, to talk about some of the things that Cynthia talked about.
But for
about.
Me, I mean, I get it. I mean, I would like to know how they distill the information, because what they really do in the analytics, and I think, and listening to Cynthia Freeland kind of bolsters what I think and kind of reinforces my belief that all that work is done beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
She comes and says, listen, here are the best three options, or here's the guy. Here's what this guy is. Here's what this guy is. And here's what this guy is. Take your pick. And then it comes down. Ultimately, it's a, you know, it's a gut feeling, because all these guys have plus, even the three best options have pluses and minuses that are attached to each of them. And you go with that feeling. It's something that has come into the league over the last, 10 years, analytics, something like that. It's become more and more refined, and therefore more and more useful.
Yeah, I think the Bills use it a lot. Hey, we want to get back to what we started the show with today about our question about the undrafted free agents. They're filtering in here now, rookies, draft picks, and undrafteds all coming here to get on the field tomorrow for the weekend rookie minicamp. Well, I don't know from you, Bills history fans.
One of the things that came up in that, we had his name in there. Brian Moorman was the punter.
Yeah.
And they said, yeah, he was a great, but he was with another team before he came
Seattle.
To Buffalo. Yeah, he was with another team. So he's not a rookie when he gets to Buffalo. So he's out of the conversation.
Yeah. Well, somebody said that in on Twitter.
Yeah. They're saying, you know, the greatest undrafted Bills, don't forget the greatest punter. That was Brian Moorman, caught from corner eight.
Who's the best rookie undrafted free agent in Bills history? On Twitter, we offered you a couple of observations, but we missed a couple too. Robert James, one of them that we missed. Somebody suggested Shane Nelson. But what do you think? 42% of you think it is Ken Hull. 42% of you think the greatest undrafted rookie free agent for the Bills was Fred Jackson. Very close. 14% say Cookie Gilchrist. 3% say somebody else. Give us a call. Lines are open. 803-0550. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. Or do it on Twitter at OneBillsLive. And we've got NFL True or False coming up. So come on back. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. And this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Whoa, I just got my earpiece fixed, Steve. Can we start the show
Welcome
over?
To the show.
Seriously, let's start right over, right back at noon. I don't know what I was doing. We're trying to talk to Cynthia Freeland, and I'm like covering up my left ear trying to hear.
We can't have her on anymore. I apologize.
Why?
She's great.
She's so smart.
She's a beautiful girl. She's smart. She does. In fact, that's the whole problem. She's way too smart.
Careful.
She started She started talking through some of her analytics approaches. I was like, wow, that's really smart. Why didn't anybody, you know, new people coming into the league. She used to be in banking. And she comes into the league and starts applying really good sense to some of these problems, and they come from a different angle.
Yep.
And it really makes a lot of sense when you hear her talk through it.
A couple of folks on Twitter appreciate her. David Swartz says, Cynthia can talk some ball.
She knew what she was talking about. You got these guys, you know, they win games, they do this and that. And what did she say? She had some really good stats. The most predictive quarterback stat is accuracy under pressure.
Ask me. I could barely hear you.
I said this. Let's see. Passing when under pressure.
Under pressure, yeah.
And so that's pretty cool to know that. Because you're always looking for we're looking for stats with Josh Allen. I wonder how many times he was pressured at Wyoming. There's so much stuff we don't know. And if we have a guest on, then it only proves how much we don't know.
Nicole Becker tweets in, she is a fantastic listen, talking about Cynthia. Love her insights and her perspective on analytics and how she uses it versus how some others do. We'll definitely follow her for more. She's a good follow on Twitter, no question about it. Because of what you know, and she kind of defies conventional wisdom. You know what I mean? When people say, "Oh, I believe this," and they've said it for 20 years, so I believe that's true. No, you got somebody like Cynthia Freeland, and I think a lot of these analytics folks just don't accept things that people have said for 20 years, 40 years.
I think that's the key thing. Plus, the league is a different atmosphere now where it used to be, and it's a little bit like the movie Moneyball. When those guys started looking at baseball scouting completely different, they got a lot of pushback from the old guard and the people who had been doing it that way for years and years because they felt threatened. You know, obviously they felt threatened by it. They don't understand, why don't you think about it the way we do? And when you get these new the atmosphere now is that when you get these new opinions in from different point of view, people are a little bit more willing to sit back and say, okay, convince me. And when they start to talk and give you their reasoning, it sounds pretty predictive. And
yeah.
And that's the whole game. If you can get analytics to show you what's going to happen next and you can get out of the game ahead of the game in your decision-making, man, everything changes.
And it's a tool. It's not everything. It doesn't have all the answers. And certainly interpersonal relationships and how people – know the people they're coaching say that play. That's a bigger tool, I think, than analytics. And I got one beef with analytics people who profess to
just one.
Well, no, I could think of more. But a lot of people think it means don't punt on fourth down. It means so much more than that, and that's part of it. When's it good to punt? When is it not good? I leave that up to the coaches for the most part, hoping, and I think they do here at One Bills Drive, they incorporate analytics into their thinking about certain game decisions, when to punt, when to call timeouts, et cetera. But that's not the only consideration for those decisions. And there's so much more involved in analytics, including the draft, as Cynthia just talked about. And I'm sure our guys use it in the draft, you know, including, you know, game planning, even, you know, the medical analytics that go on around here, you know what I mean? The physical analytics, it boggles the mind. They don't let people know what they're doing because it's proprietary information. But they do stuff with measuring physical output that certainly didn't go on 25 years ago.
Nothing is off limits now. They're starting to cut things up but with numbers all over. And they've got guys wearing sensors on the field that keep track of what workload they had in practice. And they get predictive about when a guy should be given a day off. Say, listen, he's getting to a point where his numbers are telling us he's had too much work this week. He hasn't had his hydration numbers aren't right, whatever. And they say, we're sitting him down. So it becomes injury preventative just with analytics. That's a step forward that wasn't even on the horizon at the end of my career. And now it's prevalent to the point where for the last couple of years, the National Football League itself has used those numbers about where guys are running, how fast they're running, how fast they're stopping, where they're turning, and they're doing it on the field during games. And the league, that was pretty prevalent in the meetings I had in New York a few weeks ago when they were reevaluating the kickoff and what they should do about it. They used all this cutting-edge analytics and next-gen stats to make adjustments to the game itself. And I think it's a smart way to go, obviously, and it's becoming more and more prevalent in every aspect of the game.
Give us your thoughts on any of this, what Cynthia Freeland had to say about the relationship between veteran quarterbacks, how much of a mentor should they be for rookie quarterbacks, and give us your thoughts on our topic of the day, which deals with these undrafted rookie free agents coming in tonight and tomorrow on the field tomorrow this weekend for Bills rookie minicamp. Who's the greatest rookie, undrafted rookie free agent in Buffalo Bills history? We thought of a few. You may think of some. 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550.
We got to admit, we got a little bit schooled in this Twitter poll. We left a couple of really good people off of it. Because we're trying to think about this, and you can't even go – you can't find the information about it. You kind of have to remember who wasn't drafted and how good they played for the club. And so we got, you know, Robert James we left off. And there were a lot of guys that, like Shane Nelson we left off. So there's a lot of times when the fans kind of remember their favorite player, and a lot of times, particularly in rookie free agents like we're talking about, that's why they liked him in the first place.
Right.
Because they remember their guy didn't even get drafted and he turned into a great player. And you know, our viewers now can see the list we've got on there. It goes from Cookie Gilchrist through Booker Edgerton. Robert James is now on there. Tony Green, Kent Hull, Pat Williams, Jason Peters, Fred Jackson. That's eight people, and that's just, you know, the tip of the iceberg. Yeah, guys like Jabari Greer are on that list. It goes on and on.
That's the kind of story that makes this weekend a little fun, but really training camp fun for me.
Mm-hmm.
When you get a guy who maybe shows well this weekend, then has good OTAs and a pretty good mini camp, and you go to camp and you go, now that's a guy who looked pretty good back in May. What can he do here in the training camp atmosphere? I love those stories.
Right. It plays right into our wheelhouse, too, because we talk about everybody. We talk about all these draft picks now.
Well, the 3 hours
then,
a day we got.
Right. And then when these new guys show up and they start playing well, it gives us something to talk about, something fresh. And they never cease to be great stories because they're – listen, I was drafted, but I was a ninth-round pick. I was the third player at my position taken by that team. And there were three wide receivers drafted by the same team in my year, and I was the middle one. And it's just, you know, you talk, and I had a great story. The guy drafted ahead of me, Mike Ekwu, had a great story. And the guy drafted behind me, Willie Drury, had a great story. And the two of us at the end, me and Willie Drury, we went on to have, I think Willie played for 9 years in the league, too. Mike Ekwu was out in a year and a half or two. And he never played again. And the two guys drafted with me and Willie, we played a long time. And it was just stories like that with these guys that kind of just get in on the fringe are the most fun guys to hear about. And because it, for lack of a better way to put it, it just seems to mean more to them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
There's just so much. It's just they were the longest of shots. And then to walk out of the tunnel on game day in that helmet on opening day, you know, it's a pretty special moment, and I think a lot of people would appreciate it.
Best undrafted rookie free agent in Bills history. A couple of tweets on this. Douglas Briggs Jr. I was going to say Freddie, he said. Fred Jackson, we had our running back, and Freddie always ran hard for us drought babies. Fred will always be remembered. He was so good at the screen. Man, I wish we went to the playoffs for Fred. And he's already said this. That's his second vote for Fred Jackson. You can't do it twice.
Hey.
Kurt Gregory, tough call here. Hull instrumental. Shane Nelson was a force inside when Smirlis didn't jump. Freddie's so tough. I'm going to vote number 22, Fred Jackson. I mean, yeah. Fred's a popular choice.
And he's the most recent.
Most recent, for sure.
And I think Fred went beyond just being a good player. He was the face. I said this a little earlier. He's a face of the franchise. He was the most notable guy on the team. And the guy that in the clutch situations when he was on the field, he got the ball. And he ran the ball like Buffalonians live their life, man. He never went down, you know. He was a likable guy. And I think people in Buffalo loved him for it, and rightfully so. He came back just a few weeks ago and signed a one-day deal to retire as a member of this organization. And people respond to that. You know, you don't have to apologize for picking Freddie Jackson as your number one all-time rookie free agent.
We'll talk about if you want to get a vote in on that on Twitter, you got to do it in a hurry because we're done here in 20 minutes or so. If you'd like to call us up and discuss, you better get in there too because we're running out of time. Time now for NFL True or False, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. True or False, Bears quarterback Mitchell Trubisky will have a breakout season in 2018. He had a pretty good season last year, Trubisky did, but they've, they seem to have surrounded him with some talent now. They've they've got Matt Nagy, obviously the new head coach there in Chicago, offensive thinker. They've got Allen Robinson, Taylor Gabriel. Yeah, is he going to be a breakout season in 2018? A lot of people think so.
I do.
You do? Okay,
I
go ahead. Make
He's going to be really good. Matt Nagy is a guy who's an offensive coordinator in Kansas City. He made a star out of Tyreek Hill and the other kid. He just used his guys better, and they got some guys just like they had in Kansas City, I think. And I saw Mitch Trubisky play in a start last year in Soldier Field. He was a good player, a nice young player. I loved what I saw from him. He saw the field. He read the defense. He made the throws. I liked what I saw from him. They didn't ask him to do a lot, and he didn't have much help with the running game. But I think he is primed with a new head coach and a new offensive and a refreshed offensive outlook and a refreshed offensive approach. I think Chicago is going to have a young quarterback that they like.
I'm going to go false on this, and I don't feel that strongly about it. I'm going to say false just because Trubisky, I think, still has a lot to learn. Steve, he has not played much. Didn't play much as a collegian. Got a little bit of work last year with the Bears, first year in the NFL. I don't know that he is ready to break out, whatever that means. So I'm going to go false on this. I think I'll probably have a decent year, but I still think there's a pretty steep learning curve for Mitchell Trubisky out there.
You want me to talk you out of it?
Try.
With Mitch Trubisky?
Try.
All right, Matt Nagy was with Tyreek Hill and Kareem Hunt. He worked with Alex Smith last year with that huge burst they got out of the gate. And just watching their offense last year, Nagy got a chance when he was with Kansas City. He got a chance to meet up with Mitch Trubisky during that draft process. You remember the Chiefs jumped up and got
Mahomes.
Well, Chicago took Trubisky number two overall, way before Mahomes was dropping down the board. So if you go by that, they like the physical upside of Trubisky better than they had with Mahomes, who dropped down the board. They signed Allen Robinson from Jacksonville. If Allen Robinson stays healthy, he is a legit, big-time, number one wide receiver. When he's healthy, he's as good as anybody there is in the league, and I'll stick by that statement. And when you got that guy there, and you've got these other guys that they signed, and Taylor Gabriel, who is also a guy who's a speedster. I think they're going to – and you know, they got a hybrid running back in Chicago named Tarik Cohen, who is exactly the same kind of guy as Tyreek Hill and those guys. So I think Mitch Trubisky is poised. We've seen it in the last couple of years with Carson Wentz and, of course, most notably, Jared Goff, who looked pretty bad his rookie year and with a refreshed offensive look – emerged. I think it's exactly what Mitch Trubisky's got a chance to do in Chicago this year.
I'm not going to the wall on this. I just think Trubisky's probably a year away. NFL True or False brought to you by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. Hey, I want to switch gears for a second, Steve, because I've said it a couple times in the update. Monday Night Football, their talent team is assembled now, the new Monday Night Football. Joe Tessitore, fine play-by-play voice. Jason Witten in the booth right off the field. Lisa Salters, sideline reporter. I'm wondering what you think of what they have planned for Booger McFarland. They talk about Booger McFarland going to be the first, this is all ESPN hype though, first field-level analyst for Monday Night Football. What's the difference between a field-level analyst and a sideline reporter, do you think? And tell us how difficult it is to see things.
I've done both. I've been an on-field analyst. I did it for a Buffalo Bills football game week 17 of 2016, the Jets game. Rex Ryan's last game as Bills coach.
They had me
on the field as an analyst, so I had an open mic and I could chime in with Steve Berline and Andrew Catalan in the booth. So
was it worthwhile?
It is if they can support him technically. And what the problem is this: he needs a place where he can see the game and what's going over the air.
You can't see down there, right? Or can you?
You don't have a screen to watch what's going out over the airway, so you can't match what you're saying with what's on the screen, and it totally falls on the truck. Plus, the one way that it works as an analyst is because, and people who gave us feedback on the when I was doing it, when you're speaking as an on-field analyst, it is really effective if they have a camera on your shoulder or right with you to show how close you are to the action. Because there were times when I was standing nearly as close as I am to you here in the studio from Rex Ryan, from Todd Bowles, from those guys, from the players on the bench area. I was very close to that. And to see a guy, me, talking on the air, the fans see my voice coming out, and how close I am to the field, and then have a camera pan out to see the guys walking on and off the field right out of the, in and out of the huddle. It's really compelling.
Did they have that camera for you?
At times, but not always.
Did they have a monitor for you?
No. We had a hardwired monitor. See, we were, you know, we're the sixth crew. They didn't want to do all that much.
What's that mean, hardwired?
That means I had to walk over to it to watch it.
With you.
It wasn't with me. Now, they can do that. It's technically a little bit hard to do, and it probably costs them some money. You know, they're going to have to work at it. But to do that, I think it can be really effective because that when you see a guy talking on the mic and he's looking right at the – standing right there, and you get the right chemistry between everybody, I don't – they're all new to this.
Can you see
I
enough?
Think that's – yeah.
There's stuff you can't see on the sidelines, right?
But there's stuff you can only see on the sidelines.
Right.
That's where you've got to make it.
That's where you got to talk
about. That's where you got to talk. You got to leave the big picture stuff to Jason Witten up in the booth. McFarland down in the field has got to talk about what he sees and the emotion and the grit and like when they're breaking the huddle and guys on opposing teams are making eye contact, having a silent conversation with each other and it's ill intent. Those are the kind of things you can get, the emotion of the game when you're standing right
he's
there.
He's probably well suited for that as a former lineman, right?
I think that's why he's down there. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I learned a little bit. That's got to be in What Have We Learned Today. That's good.
We'll hang on to that. What are we learning?
Yeah. All right, we've got a break coming up here. We're back in a moment. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. What do we learn? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We made it today. We had a good show. We had Micah Hyde in studio with us, the Bills' second-year safety. He's been in the league now for 6 years. Micah Hyde talked to us about how much he loves playing for Bills head coach Sean McDermott.
Number one, I think somebody like Sean McDermott, he preaches it. He preaches getting after the football, whether if it's an interception, punching the ball out, which we saw a couple times last year. You know, we practice that so much that it becomes habit. So, you know, having Sean, a motivator, as a head coach, and he's, you know, former safety coach. So he understands, you know, the defensive backs and the whole defensive mindset of creating turnovers. But then at the same time, it's the defense, man. I love this defense. It creates ways that you're looking at the quarterback and you're able to react.
Micah Hyde on the show today. Also on the show today, just a few minutes ago, Cynthia Freeland, the analytics expert from NFL Network, she talked to us about how Josh Allen, the quarterback, first-round draft pick, is a pretty good fit for the Buffalo Bills.
One of the best things about Josh Allen was his ability to connect with receivers in the red zone. So throwing two receivers in the end zone, he had 17 touchdowns last year, which actually led this quarterback class. So that could be something that maps well to what the Bills are trying to potentially achieve. Because last year, the Bills ranked 27th in red zone receiving touchdowns in the end zone. So that's kind of maybe what they're trying to select for, attributes that could kind of change the way that they play a little bit. So things like that where you try to find like sort of fits. Like how does this puzzle piece fit into this specific, you know, situation?
Pretty good point from Cynthia Freeland. We thank her for joining us on the program today. On Twitter today, we kind of tested the history of Buffalo, the knowledge of history from Buffalo Bills fans. Wanted to know from you, who's the best rookie undrafted free agent in Bills history? Now, we missed a few in our Twitter poll, but as it turns out, a close vote, 42% of you say Fred Jackson was the best. A tie vote in the end. 41% say Ken Hull, 41% say Fred Jackson, 14% say Cookie Gilchrist, 4% say somebody else. There was a long list, Steve. We had him, Robert James and Tony Green, Nelson. Pat Williams, I think, is an underrated rookie free agent in Bills history, a really good player.
It was nice, though. The Bills fans, you know, they showed up in multi-generational form. I mean, we had guys calling back, you know, Robert James and Cookie and all those guys. People remember them. It was great to see.
Thanks for playing along. Tomorrow's we're going to switch. Well, we're going to have rookies, and the rookies are here, arriving tonight and be at practice tomorrow.
Murph and I might have dead air. Murph and I are going to go out to practice. It starts at noon, and we're just going to go out and watch. We're going to be too busy to do the show tomorrow.
No, we'll do the show.
I can't wait to see.
I want to hear Josh Allen's passes, And we'll have, if you're watching tomorrow on MSG, we'll have video, a little bit of video from the workout tomorrow. We can't show you, you know, the plays or anything, but we'll show you the workout, a little bit of throwing, I would hope. And, of course, the stretching. That's always fascinating, riveting to see stretching. maybe get a little more than that.
Yeah, you can't hear the sarcasm in Murph's voice.
But also, Dan Orlovsky joins us tomorrow as well, so we look forward to that. Make sure you join us tomorrow at noon. Thanks to our production assistants, George Blass, Jeff Colton, Nick Thomas, Honolder, Kelly Rude, J.J. Chirito, and James Roble, our producer, Jay Harris. Steve and I are back tomorrow, 12 noon, with One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.